Good morning, honorable members, can you sit down so that we can start? Good morning to the department also as well. Honourable members, I received a notification that the chairperson is not well. So therefore, in the absence of the chairperson, the members will have to elect an acting chairperson. So I will, before we can start today, even ask that we have nomination. Thank you, honourable members.
Good morning, everyone. I would like to propose Honourable Oliver to be the acting chairperson.
The name of Honourable Oliver has been proposed. Any seconder for that? Second. Any other name?
Who can I propose, Mr. Hollis? Honourable Hollis.
The name of Mr. Hollis also proposed. So we have got two names. Any seconder for Mr. Hollis? Second. We have two names. Can we then go to a vote? First of all, the name of Honourable Loliwe. Can we have the hands, show of hands? Thank you. We have four for Ms. Loliwe. Any hands for Mr. Ollis? Thank you. Ms. Loliwe is officially our acting chairperson today. Can she take the thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. Can we start then with business for today? I assume that all of us have got copies of the agenda in front of us. I just want to indicate that the meeting is declared open. Can we then request the secretary to lead us in terms of the agenda?
Thank you, Acting Chair. The agenda for today, Wednesday, 15th February 2017, is as follows. Apologies, adoption of the agenda, the briefing by the Productivity SA on its quarterly performance, deliberations on that presentation, followed by another briefing by NEDLAC on also on its quarterly performance, and members will also deliberate on that presentation, and the last presentation will be by CCMA, also on its quarterly performance. Members will deliberate on that, and then the last item will be consideration of last year's minutes, draft minutes of 7 December. Thank you, Acting Chair.
Thank you, Secretary. Anyone who moves for the adoption of the agenda?
Chairperson, before you move for the adoption,
okay.
Could we just add an agenda item? We have a request from the DA that we want to put to the committee. So if you can find a space somewhere on the agenda.
Why don't you table the item so that when people reflect, they reflect on the actual item that you are proposing?
I can give you the item now if you want. Okay. Chairperson, there's a request from the DA that we ask the chairperson of the committee to invite the minister more regularly to the committee. She only attended once in this session of parliament since 2014 when we were elected, only once. And we're requesting from the DA that the minister be requested to more frequently be invited to attend this committee. So we want to table that, please, as a request from us.
There's a proposal of an additional item, invitation of the minister. Anyone who has a take on that? any person who seconds that proposal that we include on the agenda invitation of the minister. Honorable Bikram, anyone against it, then let us put that as an agenda before the minutes. Are we agreeing? Anyone for adoption of the agenda with the amendment? Honorable Franz Kalfweg.
I move for the adoption of the agenda with the amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Any seconder? Honorable Collins seconds. Can you then take us through apologies, Secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. I received, as I've mentioned, two apologies. One is from the Chairperson. I've got the sixth certificate for Chairperson, and I also received an apology from Honorable Matisha. Thank you, Chair.
Those are the apologies. Anyone wants to comment or assert the apologies?
I move for adoption of acceptance of the apologies.
And Honorable Ollis will second. Thank you. That then takes us to the actual agenda items, which is briefing by the department. At this stage, DG, I'll create an opportunity for you to introduce your entourage. Yes, we know you are always bringing them, but it's important that you indicate who's here. And thereafter, you'll get into the first item, which is briefing by Productivity SA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the honorable members, and good morning. Sitting right next to me is the CEO of Productivity South Africa, Mr. Motiwa. And the gentleman who's sitting there, the gentleman next to him is Mr. Gordon, who is the chairperson of the Audit Committee of the Productivity South Africa. And next to him is Mr. Temungosi Mkalipi, who's from the Department of Labor. And the gentleman who looks more like a lawyer there writing is the director of the CCMA, Mr. Murajana. And just on the upper row is the executive director of NEDLAC, Mr. Villagas. So I'll ask the CEOs and the executive director of NEDLAC to just introduce the board members of NEDLAC and the staff that they are with.
Thank you, DG, and thanks to the chair. Next to me is Mr. Daza Mfanofikile Daza. On my right, he's the Chief Financial Officer of NEDLAC. And on my left is Mrs. Nobuntu Sibisi. She's the head of our program operations. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable members and acting chairperson. On my right, from the start of the back, is Mr. Swissel Keller, who is the acting chairperson of the governing body of the CCMA. Next to him is Professor William Gumata, who is the chairperson of the audit committee, who is present as per the notice issued to the entities to do so. And then on my extreme right, it is Bridget Mbolega, who is the acting CFO at the CCMA. Will be presenting the finances together with me. And then next to her is Zanele Hlope, who is the Chief Audit Executive, who reports also to the Audit Committee, who's here as per the notice of this House to be present to deal with internal audit issues. And then on my left is Mr. Mkalipi, also a member of the governing board of the CCMA and also representing government. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, DJ. Now that we know your entourage, the floor is yours on the first item on the agenda.
Thank you, Chairperson and the Honourable Members. I'm going to ask the CEO of Productivity South Africa to take us through the presentation. And he promised me that the presentation will take more or less 15 to 20 minutes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Members of Parliament. We tried to respond to the request as directed by Parliament that we should come and talk to quarter one and quarter two of our annual performance plan for the 2016-2017 financial year. And I would also like to indicate that when we submitted the presentation for the 1st of February, we had actually left out performance per program. And then we also felt that for purposes of this presentation, because the year has already gone almost 90%, we should try and share with the committee how far have we gone as far as the three quarters of 2016-17, so that there can be an indication that as much as we have experienced challenges in quarter one and two, a lot of effort have gone into ensuring that we rev up our performance and is beginning to show in the third quarter. And I would like to then go to the slide that gives us the overall performance of the organization. The legend just talks to the fact that we actually evaluate our performance precisely on the fact that you either have achieved what you set out to do or you have not achieved. And that's the approach that we took in preparing this presentation. If you look at the first slide that actually talks to our overall performance, Productivity South Africa is focusing on six strategic objectives. And if you look at our annual performance indicators for the 16-17 financial year, we set ourselves 40 performance indicators. In quarter one, we planned to focus on 28 of those indicators, and in quarter two on 33. And then if you look at our performance rate, in quarter one we achieved 20 of the 28, and in quarter two we achieved 23 of the 33. And in quarter one we failed to achieve 11 of those 28. And in quarter two, we failed to achieve 15 of those indicators. And if you do that, you look at the performance in terms of percentage. We, in quarter one, achieved 61% of the things that we planned to do. And in quarter two, 71%. And I would like to just reflect on strategic objective one, because those are the areas where we actually have challenges. When you look at strategic objective one, which is talking to support initiatives aimed at preventing job losses, you will realize that in quarter one, it's a 0% achievement. And in quarter two, we had a 75% achievement. And when you aggregate then it leaves us at 60%. And then the other area that is of challenge for us is, if you look at strategic objective 4, facilitate and evaluate productivity improvement and competitiveness in workplaces, where in quarter one we achieved 57%, quarter two 43%, and we're at a 50% performance rate. And then the other area that is of serious concern for us also is the human resources management area, where in quarter one we achieved 40% and in quarter two 75%, which aggregates at 55%. Overall performance for this organization, however, it's at 70% if we talk to the first semester. And I need to indicate that if you look at the annual report for 2015-16, overall performance was at 43%. So for a movement from 43 to 70, it's beginning to show that there's a lot of effort that is being put in the area of performance, although we're still struggling when it comes to the areas of two areas which are critical for the labor market. There is support to enterprises that are facing retrenchment in order to save jobs, as well as the areas of workplace challenge, where we're talking about continuous improvement in order to have enterprises competitive and be able to sustain operations. As I indicated, we felt that we should share with the committee the overall performance just right up to the end of the financial year, up to the end of December, that is the 3 months into the year. You can see that area of support initiatives aimed at preventing job losses is still a critical area that has challenges, and also the area around workplace challenge, which is still at 67, and you can see that in some instances, particularly if you look at strategic objective 2, if you talk to quarter 1 and quarter 2, you'd realize that almost 167% was achieved in quarter 1, which is a serious area, challenge, if you talk to performance management, because then analysis of our indicators say we probably under-targeted to the extent that we almost achieved all that we had to do in quarter two, and then you can begin to see that in quarter three, the resources were withdrawn from that area so that we focus on the other areas. That's just another thing that I wanted to highlight to the committee. Why haven't we performed? If you look at the area that talks to support to enterprises going under economic distress in order to save jobs, there is very little done in particularly quarter one, where we actually achieved a zero, precisely because the funding that we received from the UIF, we received it in July. So the year was already gone. That is four months into the financial year was gone, so that there wasn't much that we could do. However, we then began to do work in the second quarter. And what we then did, if you look at the second bullet point, is that on realizing that we could not receive the full transfer, we then took the 24 million that we received and we translated it to the number of companies that we could assist in that period. And that is why you see that we actually reduced the number to 33 in order to fit into the budget available, and that to that extent we can be able to then assist those companies and reduce the levels of retrenchments. Also, the semester target of 70 entrepreneurs to join Workplace Challenge. That's the program that we deliver in partnership with the DTI. We're not met. However, 90% of those targets were met in the first and second semester. So I'm not much worried about that. The latest information I put together was that by the end of the financial year, we'll actually achieve the target. And also, the issue around monitoring and evaluation tool has been delayed. Therefore, the reports for the first and second quarters are still outstanding, but we have managed to close that area in the third quarter. And another area that is of a challenge, as I said, there is value chain competitiveness. It's around productivity statistics. That has been delayed because we had challenges of capacity in that area. And then also that the SMME target was not completely achieved due to postponement of planned training by strategic partners. Particularly in this area, we are looking at the support that we get from the small business development as well as the SIDA. So in the first and second quarter, we're still trying to pull our heads together with those strategic partners so that we can be able to do work that we're supposed to do. We then put in place remedial actions that we feel if we intervene in those areas, we'll be able to improve on our performance. And one of those is that we have had a series of meetings with the UIF to the extent that we have now finally agreed that we should establish the governance structures which we have since established, and they are able to help us to manage this relationship and ensure that we deliver on that. The other area that is important to highlight to the committee is that there's a lot of information that comes from the CCMA regarding the companies that apply for Section 189. And the partnership that we've established with the CCMA, to the extent that we've been able to sign a memorandum of agreement, it's actually helping, because in the past we had challenges of leads in terms of companies that are going through distress. But with this partnership, we have begun to see a maturity in that level, because then they are able to refer companies to us. We sit in the evaluation committee when companies are evaluated for whether they are a candidate for retrenchment. And once we say their problem is operational efficiency, then they're able to refer them to us so that we assist them. If you go to the slides that talk to if we could just skip those to go to that's in that slide, we're trying to show the committee the impact that we were actually focusing on in terms of the work that we do. There are three areas there that are of focus, which are related to productivity, organizational solutions, and workplace challenge, as well as turnaround solutions. What we're trying to show the committee here is the work that we do as it relates to service delivery outcome 4, which has to do with decent employment through inclusive growth. If we don't focus our energy on improving workers' education and skills, as well as reduce workplace conflict through our workplace forum interventions, and also focusing on vulnerable workers through turnaround solutions, then productivity SA will not be doing what it is supposed to do in terms of it being an instrument of interventions in terms of active labor market programs. So we felt we should give you this slide so that you get a picture of our focus areas, in particular when we say we're focusing on three sectors, the manufacturing sector, the mining sector, as well as agriculture and agro-processing. So these are the key things that we think by the year 2019 we should actually have begun to make a difference in those areas. Just the that slide shows how do we intervene at three levels. Enterprises that are at a break-even point, or which we refer to as emerging enterprises, as well as the top of the curve, indicate stable companies. That's where we intervene in terms of a continuous improvement. And then at the lower end of the curve, it's actually companies that are going through economic distress. So that's the scope of our intervention in terms of productivity work. And then we then pulled out information from programs that if you talk to program that relates to productivity organizational solutions, we're giving you an indication of the work that we do around SMMEs and cooperatives, and to try and then draw that information per province. You can easily see that we were able to assist in Gauteng, over 1,800 SMMEs, particularly in the manufacturing sector, in Limpopo, 416 in the manufacturing and mining, in Mpumalanga, 47 forestry. We were not able to make a difference in the Eastern Cape, in KwaZulu-Natal, 109 in manufacturing, in the Western Cape, 111 in manufacturing, and in the Free State, 194 in agriculture. And then we tried to give an indication in terms of demographics, the people that we are able to assist according to the years, 18 to 35, 35 to 36 to 55, and 55 and above, so that we then are able to track whether we're really making a difference or not. And we also try and show those figures in terms of male as well as females, so that we begin to also influence issues of transformation in the labor market within the productivity space. With regard to the Workplace Challenge Program, we are showing that the numbers in terms of interventions for continuous improvement in Gauteng, 55, Limpopo, 32, and in overall 612 companies. And you can see in the third column where we talk about industry sectors, that our focus is within the sectors, as I said, manufacturing, agriculture, as well as mining. And we also show you, at least in the companies that we intervene, those 619, you can see the number of people who are employed in those companies at 49,000 or so. In terms of the Turnaround Solutions Program, that's the one that we have a partnership with the UIF. We were able to assist 18 companies, and then we reflect the sectors and the number of people who are employed in those 18 industries at 2,300 or so. I will skip the slide that shows the graphs. And just to give a summative analysis, that we are aware that when you look at the figures that come from the CCMA in the 15-16 financial year, over 36 companies retrenched. However, our intervention is very insignificant, to the extent that we're only able to assist 6,976 employees, in a way saving 6,000 jobs against 36,000. That's an area of concern for us, that moving forward in the discussions with the UIF, that's an area that we feel we need to do more as an entity. And we're showing that in the 16-17 financial year, we received 24 million instead of the 97 million, and to that extent, our impact is going to be very insignificant. I would like to move off that slide so that I can just give an indication of the financial report. Productivity South Africa receives funding from three sources in terms of the provisions of Section 40. We receive money appropriated by Parliament. You can see that we received 47 million, and to the extent that as at the end of the financial year, the midterm, we utilized 23% thereof, 23 million thereof, with a deviation of 7.9. And then when you look at the grants that we received from the UIF, the third column indicates the actuals, that we actually received 24 million, and then we could only, as at mid-year, spend 7.9 million. And then from the DTI, we received 10 million, and we spent all that money. And in terms of other incomes, those are where we do consulting work. We were able to raise 136,000. So in total, the actual income that we received is 73 million, and we were then able to actualize 46 thereof, and with a deviation of 24 million. So this is reflective of our financial situation, to the extent that if we move at this rate, it then indicates that we're actually going to pick up a deficit at the end of the financial year. Chairperson, if I could, I would stop it at this point.
DJ, any addition? Thanks. Members, that's the presentation. Any questions? I've noted Honorable Olive. Any other hand? Honorable Tongwane, Honorable Franz Kavik, Honorable Mkongi, in that order. Honorable Olive.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, welcome, thank you for coming, and thank you for your presentation. We certainly appreciate it when people come and do give us feedback on their entities. I'm a staunch supporter of Productivity SA because I think that they have an essential function in South Africa. We're an economy which often has job losses, and this is one of the few entities that can do something specific and practical and can save jobs. So I think everybody on the committee really supports the work that you do. It's valuable work, and I think we would like to support you in future to do even more. I do have some concerns about the presentation, obviously. We're aware as a committee of the problem with getting your funds in the first quarter due to the problem with the UIF and the documents, and you gave us an explanation last time you came to present, so we do understand that. I don't think we need to rehash that saga again. It was a big mistake, and we all agree that it was a mistake, and it's been fixed, I take it, and that you are now getting your funding to do your work, so, you know, I think we can leave that one alone. However, when I look at your presentation on our page 3, which would be your slide 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think it is, performance per strategic objective. Quarter 1, in terms of support initiatives aimed at preventing job losses, there's a zero. I understand that was because you didn't have the funds, so I'm not going to ask you any more questions about that. What I'm concerned about is quarter 3, there's another zero. Now, by then, you had sorted out the funding problem. So I don't accept the zero in quarter 3. That explanation is no longer be a funding problem. that means there's something else. There's a systemic problem. Can you please explain the zero in quarter three? I don't accept that. Then your next slide, only a portion of funding was received, which equates to 33 companies for the 2016-2017 financial year. But when you turn over the pages and you look at the breakdowns you've given us, nothing adds up to 33. If you look on our page 7, turnaround solutions, it's 18 companies. The slide above that, workplace challenge, 619 companies. Number of SMMEs, owners and cooperatives, well, the total column is blank, but it looks about 2,300 or 2,400. So I don't understand the 33. And this is one of the problems we have as members of parliament with presentations like this. If the numbers between the different pages don't add up, then we don't know how to evaluate it, because we don't actually know which 33 are you referring to, and why is there only 18 in the turnaround solutions. I would have assumed that the 33 companies would be the same as the 18 in the turnaround solutions. But if that's not the case, then I need an explanation. You know, well, the numbers don't add up. It's difficult to evaluate. I understand also that you had your problem with the funding, but now we need a catch-up program. We understand there was a problem. We understand that quarter one was a disaster. But we've got to try and work faster, quicker, more efficiently in the third and fourth quarters to catch up. Is there a plan to fast-track helping of companies now that the money is arriving and that you are able to use it? If you're having further problems getting funding from the department, then please tell us, because that would make me very unhappy if it's still ongoing problems with funding. But we need an escalation program to reach more companies. We've got the latest quarterly survey of jobs again, and in construction, and what is the other category? We've again had job losses in the construction industry, and maybe somebody can help me. There was a second category where we lost a lot of jobs, and in other sectors, there was a slight increase in jobs. So, it's mining. Mining and construction, we lost a lot of jobs. We had an increase in jobs in transport and some other sectors, so that the overall performance as a country is that we are 0.2% up. It's a very small number, which means that you have a lot of work to do, because there's a lot of companies in distress, a lot of people are retrenching, and so I would imagine the need for your interventions is great, and I think we need to try to fast-track that. The turnaround solutions, there are only 18 companies and only 2,334 employed. Those numbers are low. And I'm going to have to rely on my memory, because you haven't given us a comparison with last year and the year before. But if I rely on my memory, I think that number's low. I think the numbers have been higher in the past, and really we need to do more. Your summative analysis leaves me with lots of questions, because I don't understand your numbers. You say, according to the labor market survey, the economy has lost 36,483 jobs over the period 2015 and 2016. That can't be correct. My memory says it was about 700,000 jobs we lost. You know, either I'm deluded or this number means something else. So forgive me if I've misunderstood it, but it appears that the economy as a total lost only 36,000 jobs in that financial year. That's nonsense. It can't be. I think maybe the categories are different. The category that I'm thinking of is the total economy. Maybe the category that this talks about is a subset, maybe certain categories. I don't know. But it can't be that the economy only lost 36,000 jobs. It was a much, much bigger number, 700 maybe, or I can't remember the exact number. I can Google it later. And we only helped in turnaround solutions with a saving of 6,976 jobs. Productivity SA has got a history of saving lots of jobs. And in this particular financial year, 6,900 is very few. We would have liked to see 100,000 jobs saved, not 6,976 jobs. The number is low, which means the performance in this year is not great, I don't think. And I think we need to do something to increase the number of companies we're interacting with as Productivity SA, and we need to increase the number of jobs that we're saving. And also these statistics in this report need to be more meaningful to us. That 36,000 jobs can't be right, and the other numbers I've spoken to you about on the previous pages also, there's a problem with numbers here that I don't fully understand. So if you can just clarify for me, maybe I've misread, sometimes I don't fully understand and I misread the numbers, but those numbers worry me. And it looks to me like the total interventions, the number of interventions is dropped and the number of jobs being saved is dropped. And this in an economy when you've got 9 million unemployed people and a lot of people losing their jobs every quarter. I think this is, am I correct in saying this is the first quarter in about a year when we haven't in total lost jobs, where it's been a flat 0.2% increase in actual jobs, which is that we grew a few jobs. That's unusual. We've had quarter after quarter of job losses. So, I mean, there should be more interventions. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable Tongane. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable only somehow covered some of the questions I had. But then again, on the slide that talks to challenges, it is indicated here that the position to the chief economist is vacant and cannot be filled due to lack of funding. And on the next slide that talks to the remedial action, it is indicated that a part-time economist will be appointed. I perhaps did not understand that quite well, but what I want to know again is where will the money be coming from? That will be it for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Franz Galkwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. When looking at listening to the last statement made by the presenter, he spoke about the deficit that's currently there, and looking at the current trend, it will most definitely have the same impact at the end of the financial year. So my question is, whilst they are foreseeing or preempting that they will most definitely have a deficit, do they have action plans in place to try and prevent that from happening? The other question that I want to ask that's cross-cutting, and I want the other presenters, when they come and present, they should reflect on that, is with regards to the previous audit outcomes. I want to know that whilst we are nearing the end of the financial year, I want the assurance on the action plans that you have in place to address the previous year's financial year's audit outcomes, both internal and external audit findings, and when reflecting on the performance as far as quarter three, do you foresee that the same situation will prevail at the end of the financial year? When looking at the action plans that they have in place, we've seen that there's been measures that has been implemented in terms of the chairpersons of the audit committees, and we want to know if that really resulted in positive feedback at so far as quarter three. I think I'll pause there, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mkongi.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. I just have a number of questions. Maybe some of my questions will be induction requests on a number of issues. I'm not sure what entails a program of saving jobs. What actually are you doing when you're saying you're saving jobs? Because we are speaking about saving jobs, and you are also talking in the very same tone about saving companies that are in distress. Now, because I'm trying to run away from the situation where departments are going to duplicate the work. What is the relationship with the DTI? Because the DTI is having a program that is called Business Rescue. And the major question that I always ask, what criteria do you use to, if we are part and parcel of that Business Rescue program or of saving companies that are in distress? This question is aimed at understanding whether we are saving companies that are not complying with the national goals of South Africa. One of those national goals is broad-based black economic empowerment. The governance of those companies and the involvement of the workers in the management of those companies. So what criteria? Because we'll be saving people who reject the trajectory of our own country and who are not necessarily investing most of their resources into the country. So what criteria do you use in terms of that? The issues of affirmative action are part and parcel of the criteria you use to save those companies that are in distress. Two, Chairperson. If you have a relationship with the CCMA, whether a structured relationship or any other relationship, what is their role in the workplace challenges program that you have? Because my worry is for CMMA to receive complaints at the tail end, when those conflicts, they started before in the company, before there had been a dispute that goes to the CCMA. So if you're talking about workplace challenges, we are trying to mend relationships at the company level or at the shop floor. So what is the relationship or the role of the CCMA in that particular program? What is your entrepreneurship program? Because, you know, my worry is one, is that DTI is doing these jobs. They are having program and funding dedicated in the support of small, medium, and microeconomic enterprises. And there is funding dedicated for that. Is this the funding that DTI gives you to do this job? Or we are duplicating the work that the DTI is doing through this particular function? Because if that is so, why this is not a DTI task, it becomes your own task, you know, in order to reduce, because we have a budget that is small. And now if you have a small budget and you have a plethora of tasks, you're not going to be able to achieve your goals. And that could be the problem. That is why you receive 30% achievement of your goals, because you've got many, many, many programs with the small money that you can dedicate into strategic programs that are going to make you to be efficient and effective as an organization. The last one, you don't explain in detail these deviations. In your financial report at the back, we spoke about deviations. They are red things, they are 7 million, 16 million, and then the overall is 24. What are those deviations? And were those deviations discussed with the Auditor General's office? And then they agreed in terms of those deviations that you are reporting today. That's far. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. I think the last batch will be coming from me. I'm looking at your slide 4, in particular quarter 2, where you have four planned indicators, You say you have achieved three and not achieved three. There's no tally of numbers there. Same thing in quarter five. In slide four, when you talk of support initiatives aimed at preventing job losses, quarter two you have planned for, you achieve three and not achieve three. Then when we go to quarter one, in quarter one you say for developing, let me see now, for developing relevant productivity competence, there you have planned three indicators. You have achieved one and not achieved one. Why are you saying that one is not achieved when your target was three? Because I think you have overperformed there, which is supposed to be appreciated. Then let's go lastly to slide 11 in your graph there. I just need assistance in terms of interpretation with your graph in slide 11. If you look at that graph, I assume that below the white line on my right is ICU, but you find that the ICU period is constituting a Y. What is the implication of the continuing line and the one which then goes up again? Thank you. DJ. Switch off your mic, DJ.
I think the first question relate to the overall performance where there's a zero in quarter three when there is an expectation that more should have been done. But when we compiled this report, in essence what we are simply saying is if we had 10 things to achieve, we should achieve the 10. So anything below that 10, it's a zero. It goes with the legend that we have given.
Jefferson, can you please just explain that again? I don't understand that.
He needs further explanation. Thanks.
I just want to, if you could go to the legend. He's not actually showing what I'm looking for, so that I can explain that. What we would reflect is, if we have 10 indicators, we must achieve that 10, and then it becomes what we reflect. Anything less than that 10, it's a zero. That is why we gave it a zero. But when you go to the slides that actually indicate performance per program, then we begin to give the detail. As much as we said it's a zero, but there's work that went into that program, and then we show you of the things that we set ourselves to do in terms of targets, we have achieved so many. I'll give an example, particularly on the program where we're talking about support initiatives aimed at preventing job losses. That would be our slide 10, just to give an explanation. And it would then respond to other questions. If you look at the...
On our printed copy, it doesn't have slide numbers. It's only got page numbers, and you've got two slides per page. So can you please indicate which one you consider to be slide 10, because I can't follow otherwise. I don't know what is slide 10. Which one is slide 10?
Slide 10 would be the one talking to program 1.
Can I assist? When you are mentioning a slide number, I want to propose that whoever is assisting you with flighting the slides, just go to that slide so that members can see and then compare with what they have in the hard copy.
Go to the slide that talks to program 1, turnaround solutions for quarter 1 performance. Chairperson, I think there's a problem with the information that is there. Can I just explain what I'm referring to? When we talk about the number of future forums established, you would find that in quarter one, the target was 0, and then we achieved 8. But if you go to quarter 2, which is the area where there's a question mark, number of future forums is 13. However, when you go to the total in terms of number of jobs saved in companies facing economic distress, in quarter 2, we targeted 3,000, and we only achieved 952, which then shows that there's a serious discrepancy in that area. Now, just on the turnaround solution program, the negatives are on the number of work plans developed, number of work plans implemented, productivity champions trained, and the number of jobs saved. Now, that by itself then just pull us out of a... That's why we're saying we rate that performance at a 0. Although we have done work, because progress does show that the number of future forums, 13, number of work plans developed, 11 against 14.
Chairperson, I'm sorry to interrupt again. Where is the information you're reading?
Can we do it this way? Allow him to respond. If then we have follow-up questions, let's indicate that once he has done with the explanation, because once we do it in this fashion, it means we are not going to finish this session. Thanks.
So as I indicated, we put it at 0 because there's a lot of negatives in that area. Although work has did take place, but you cannot count it at the level of percentage performance. The next question was why 33 companies targeted. As I indicated, our plan was to intervene in 160 companies. However, if you look at the money that we received, we only received 24 million instead of 97 million. And then to that extent, we then asked what can be done with 24 million, and that is why we're talking about those 33 companies, that you can only intervene in 33 companies if we have a budget of 24 million. To the extent that then for quarter 1 and 2, we started doing work only in 18 companies of the 33. the rest of the work will be done in the third and fourth quarter. So hence, when you look at the slides, you have 33, and then you also have 18. 33 is the target because of the vision due to the funds received, and then the intervention was in 18 companies. The question goes further to say, is there a catch-up program to ensure that we do more in that regard? Yes, on realizing that the first thing is, because then we have 33 companies to focus on, we then pulled, as I indicated, the work that was done by the team that is in productivity operations solutions. We pulled them off because they had already achieved their targets. We pull them off so that we focus on the turnaround solution program. They have capacity to can do that work. To the extent that I'm confident that at the end of the financial year, we shall have done the 33 companies. The other thing that we have done, because some of the things that we realized had to do with our relationship with the UIF, so far we have established a governance structures with the UIF, and I think they're beginning to function. We can see the results because the level of accountability has also improved as we relate to the turnaround solution program. The issue that you raise about the numbers being low, I think it's just because of we lost 4 months in the first quarter. So to the extent that of the 6 months that we were performing in terms of April to September, after having lost 4 months, effectively we only had 2 months to intervene. But because of those interventions that we've put in place, I am confident that we will improve in that area. The slide that talks to the summative, if you could go to that one. The question is why we're talking about the labor market in terms of 36,000. I should qualify that. That's the drawing statistics from the CCMA. That is in terms of section 189A. I apologize for that. In essence, what we're saying is the work that the CCMA did was they adjudicated over companies to the extent that 36 ultimately shed jobs. However, the challenge still remains that in terms of our response rate, we could only respond in terms of 6.9. Now, and that's where I'm saying that's the discussion that we're having with the CCMA, I'm sorry, with the UIF, to say if we have large numbers of workers retrenched and we have a program that actually can deal with that, more so that there's a relationship that we have with the CCMA now. They're able to give us the numbers, but also when they do the adjudication, we have our experts sitting in those teams to be able to say, this is an operational inefficiency matter. Therefore, then we identify that company at source. So our response rate should actually be higher because you have the data now. In response to Honorable Klawani, I think the challenge of the economist, the reality is we took long to actually finalize that matter. This is a person who went on medical boarding. However, because this is a critical area in terms of also productivity statistics, once she was then boarded, we looked within for funding. We actually froze some of the vacancies that we had so that we can target strategic areas for intervention. Honorable Franz Kalkweg, on the deficit, whether we do have action plan, yes we do. The first is we focused on the UIF account as well as the DTI account. If you look at quarter three on the DTI account, we're beginning to do work, more work than we did in the past, and that's where we're able to raise revenue. However, we're still having a few challenges on the UIF account, but I believe that by the end of the financial year, we'll be able to recover the costs so that at least we mitigate against the deficit. Issues around audit outcomes for 15-16, we have classified audits, and we realize that we actually have the following areas that are of a problem to us. They relate to PFMA compliance. That's a serious challenge that we have. Now, when you have challenges of that nature, one of the things that you will sit with, I mean, would be the cause, is that you don't have controls. Number one, we did not have, just as a start, the supply chain management policy, which we have developed. We realize that we've got weaknesses in the finance division, and what we did, we just intervened in that area. Unfortunately, those are technical areas. When we began to intervene, that's where we, in a way, I don't know whether it's for the good or the bad, we then had the financial CFO resigning, we had the manager for finance resigning, but we are rebuilding that area because we want to clean up that environment so that we actually enhance our control environment. We called in our internal auditors to just focus on those areas in terms of PFMA as well as BBB FMA, and we put in plans. I am confident up to so far that the issues of non-adherence to generally accepted accounting principles, issues around supply chain management not followed, non-adherence to treasury and other finance-related prescripts, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we will diminish those greatly. Because where people have wasted state resources, we have actually disciplined them. So I'm comfortable that we will the issues around external audits as well as internal are diminishing because of those interventions. I think Honorable Nkongi asked a question relating to what has been done to save jobs, in particular companies in economic distress. The relationship with the UIF is informed by when a company goes through economic distress, there are two things that we look at. At one level is their financials, we do a financial assessment, and then the second thing is we do an operational efficiency assessment. The work of productivity SA, and I'm also wanting to respond to your question relating to, are you not doing something that has to be done by somebody else? The work of productivity SA, it's actually about the manufacturing plant. So that our consultants would then look at whether the plant is, in terms of the processes, are the processes streamlined? Do they take long or short to manufacture, resulting in cost? So we mitigate against cost. We mitigate against poor quality. We also mitigate against time, so that you produce on time, and then you're able to reach the market. So no any other state entity does that. As much as we intervene in small enterprises, our focus is on the manufacturing plant itself, so that you can help them to streamline their business processes, so that you reduce wastage, you increase their speed of production, and also that you help them to be productive. We don't get into the space of business management, which would be done by the CEDA. And we do have a relationship with CEDA at the level of MOA, where when we intervene in a company, if it is a management challenge per se, then we give it to them to be able to do that. And then effectively, when you intervene in a company where you talk about what is the criteria used, it's precisely that. Are you efficient in terms of operations? Do you produce quality? And then do you produce on time, that is speed? So we look at those, and once we pick up that, you are actually losing market share because you deliver late to the market. Two, the products that you produce, you actually have a lot of wastage. Then that's where we intervene. But also to say, then, if it is a company that is going to lose 2-3 jobs, we would opt for a company that would, at a minimum, would lose 20 jobs, so that at least we step in on time and assist them to save those jobs. You raised an issue also about the relationship with the CCMA. What is the role of the CCMA in the workplace fora? The workplace fora that we established, and I think it's important that I make a distinction between this one and those as per the Labor Relations Act. The focus here is just to ensure that management and workers talk on productivity issues so that workers also contribute to improving what is happening on the ground from a productivity point of view as per the issues that I have raised. And the results of our intervention have begun to show. If you pick up on the companies that we've assisted, there's more collaboration between workers and management to the extent that we've begun, the analysis that we have recently done is that we're beginning to see an improvement in turnover. We're beginning to see an improvement in terms of cost management, the result being that at least the companies can be competitive and also they can retain or create jobs. We're working on an analysis in terms of the why we gave you the impact is to say the interventions that we did since 2014, are they bearing fruit? I believe that result would come out at the end of the financial, but we are confident that as much as we don't have sufficient financial resources, our interventions are bearing fruit. There's also a question on what is the role of productivity SA in relation to SMMEs and DTI. The DTI program is focused on continuous improvement. The funding with 8 million so that we are able to intervene in companies that are stable. If you look at that curve, at the top of it, those companies are, in a way, they are doing well, but not that well. Now, the intervention is that at least if you intervene in terms of the workplace challenge program, you're able to improve their performance. We're utilizing the Japanese model, the Kaizen model, where you're talking about streamlining operations, doing the simple things like when you need a tool, find it quicker, and so on and so forth. So that's the difference. We don't assist, as I said, companies that are having challenges with market share. But we assist those which are picking up problems precisely because they're not doing well as per what is expected. To the extent that we're now talking with the DTI on the program relating to the companies that are exporting so that we can intervene there and assist them to be more productive. With regard to the deviations and whether those have been discussed with the AG, we do in our quarterly meetings on audit, the audit and risk committee, the AG sits in that, and our reports on a quarterly basis goes both to the DTI, I'm sorry, to the Treasury as well. So these figures are disclosed,
and they would also reflect in our financial statements at the end of the financial year. The issues raised about the slides where we actually indicated that we plan to do so, and then I apologize, I think that's an error that I'll correct. But it's specific that it's just if we plan to do so much in terms of target and we have achieved so much, we will indicate the deviation. Sometimes we don't put the bracket to show that we have achieved more than what was planned, because we have to explain if we have a deviation, we must explain the reason for the deviation. However, and I would like to talk to the program Productivity Operation Solutions. What once I found out is that as much as we planned for the year, we achieved almost 90% of our targets in quarter one. Now, in terms of performance management, that's something worrisome, because it might indicate that we actually under-targeted to the extent that we just ran and achieved. However, we use that as an advantage to say that we should take those resources and deploy them somewhere. And that is why we deploy them into the turnaround solutions program. On the slide that talks about the graph, I grappled to get the question.
Let's look at the graph. There is on the screen. If you look at the white line below it, it's saying is ICU. And if you look at the line in ICU, there's one which is continuing, which ends that block or the triangle there. But you see there's a stage where your line is branching to face up again. What does that mean?
Yeah,
before you respond, I noticed that we have future leaders in the gallery that have come to join the committee. Unfortunately, nobody came to indicate where they are coming from. You are welcome. This is the Parliament of South Africa, and this is how members of Parliament do things in committees. Over to you, sir.
Our ideal environment is that if a company moves from the top of that curve, it does show two things. One is operational efficiency or finances. They are declining, therefore, they become a company in distress. Our wish is that we should not find companies below the white line. Because once they are below the white line, in essence, there isn't much you can do. You would always find that they've already retraced, either because we knew about them after the fact. So that ICU is just an indication that once they are below that line, it is so difficult to assist them so that you turn them around. However, it is always the intention that before they drop below the line, we should have intervened so that then there is a movement upward and we can then put them into the workplace challenge program as aftercare. So the way this graph works is that first, you have emerging companies that you assist, they will grow to the top of the peak, but those that fall off, we should also have an intervention as a basket, but once below the line, it's a very difficult situation to face.
DG, as we were being given responses, I was looking at members, I get a sense that some of the responses we received were not up to what we wanted to understand. Without rejecting the report, but in terms of explanations that are given to members, move with the members so that they understand what you mean. For instance, on this issue of the graph, you can't draw a graph based on your wishes. You draw a graph based on what is taking place. Because to me, you are reporting to us your operations. And then if it's something that you still, you in a graph, you are supposed to reflect that this is the trend. I don't know whether you want to make any additions to the responses given. I see Honorable Mukongi, Honorable Ollis, Honorable America, Honorable Khaula. Some have follow-up questions and others want to ask further questions. But I want to appeal to us all, if we can take this within the next 10 minutes, so that we don't spend a lot of time on this one, and we don't have time for the next items. That's teacher.
Thank you, Chair. Just to explain the graph. The graph depicts the stages at which Productivity South Africa intervenes in the business cycle. Now, the level at the ICU level, it's at the stage where there are instances where Productivity South Africa intervenes and the company improves and it goes out of the ICU and it starts to pick up and be productive again. However, there are instances where, given the level at which the company has been operating and the challenges that it has experienced, even with the intervention of Productivity South Africa, the company still goes down. And it means that you cannot save the company. And it has a result of all the things that the CEO has mentioned, the cost structure of the company, the processing approach that they use, whether it's vertical integration or horizontal integration, it has to do with how the company sets its business model, and the type of cost, whether it's fixed cost and variable cost, in terms of its cost structure. So that's how the graph is set up. It's not the outcome of the current interventions that the Productivity South Africa has come up with. It actually depicts the stages where they intervene in companies where the companies are facing economic distress.
Honorable Mkongi.
No, thank you, Chairperson. No, I wanted to make a follow-up or to add from your question, and DG attempted to answer me on that question, because that is the worry that I have with the graph. Because at the x-axis, the graph speaks about break-even. You can see there. Now, if we are talking about break-even, that necessarily means it's where the company can go down. That is where, whether they make a profit or they will be making a loss. Is the balance. Now, my worry in this graph is, if you're talking about workplace programs, and then you're talking about you yourself being in companies where you are hands-on, therefore you can see whether these companies are going to make more profits and then they are going to grow, or the company, they are going to go down. And you rescue them before they even go below the break-even, which is your x-axis there. Now, the question that says, is this the wish graph, is still relevant. Because if it was a practical thing that happens, that you are reporting, you are not going to save only when they go down. Because if they are below the x-axis, you can see break-even, the point, that is where they go down.
below the x-axis. Now, at what point does productivity South Africa intervenes, you know, and save among these particular companies? You know, because for me, I don't understand how can you save a company that is already below the break-even and then is going into the ICU. You understand? So this is what is confusing about the graph. Whether the ICU actually is the large, the triangle. You know, because what is the meaning of that triangle? Is companies that are dead, that you left, and then everyone was retrenched, and then they closed, I mean, the plant, and so forth. So this must be explained. Whatever the day, I must explain this thing to my constituents. I must not transfer to them. I must be able to explain what is this and what does it mean.
Okay. Honorable Ollis.
Thanks, Chair. DG, there's quite a few factual errors in his presentation, which really we need to have sorted out when we get these presentations to Parliament. And please can I ask DG that you ask all of your entities, when they come to present to Parliament, to number the slides, not the pages, the slides, because then it's clear, then we don't ask stupid questions and go around in circles. Please, if every entity, I know today you've not prepared it, but for the future presentations, please just give every slide a number. And you can say, number three, we're all on the same page, and we don't have to waste time and go around in circles. But my actual comment is back to that 0% in quarter three. We've got the CEO referring to items which are not on a slide to explain that thing. We don't know how to deal with that as a committee. You're introducing items which your colleague with the laptop can't find on the slide, and that doesn't help us. But in terms of the explanation, I still don't have an understanding of why in quarter three all nine targets were missed. I understand why they were missed in quarter one. It was a money problem. The funds couldn't be got from the entities that were supposed to pay you, and there were some administrative reasons for that. It was all explained last time. We understand quarter one. I don't understand why quarter two you achieved zero. Quarter three, 6 months later, you achieved 0% of the targets. You tell us some work was done, and then you gave us some examples which we couldn't find on the slide. But what you don't tell us is why you failed to achieve all of the targets in quarter three on that line item on support initiatives aimed at preventing job losses. So those support initiatives, all nine ways of measuring it, you failed. I don't understand why. Can you explain why? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions relate to, amongst others, the annual report that was presented to us at last year, where the targets for the new financial year were presented to us. I'm going to start there, and then I'm going to try to link it up with the current report we have. Firstly, there is an anomaly in terms of the revenue budget for, which is much less than what you presented here today, 191 million and whatever. It's a difference of over 7 million, because in last year you budgeted for a total revenue stream of 183,666,000. So, you know, what's the anomaly? And if you look at the breakdown of the different revenue streams, it seems as to the allocation that was made by UIF and the Department of Labor and the DGI were more or less in line with what you budgeted for, but there's elsewhere there's an anomaly, and maybe you could explain that. And then furthermore, I don't get a sense that, you know, we have been given the complete picture as to what has transpired from your activities, particularly with regard to the turnaround strategy, because there are lots of elements that are missing there that that were presented to us to be achieved, and there's no reporting on that. And I'm going to take you to a number of those sort of elements. Firstly, if one look at the turnaround solutions, and you have in terms of your presentation, you have stated clearly how important that is to prevent organizations from finding themselves in the ICU. That timely intervention that can save jobs, and that is the primary sort of function that you see yourself and role you see yourself playing. And if I look at what you have budgeted for in terms of the targets that you set for this financial year, you have stated at the beginning of the financial year that you intend to save 10,000 jobs. What we have here is a lowering of those targets, and regardless even the lowering of those targets from 10,000 to 6,500 to 6,500, you've actually to date have only have saved 2,541 jobs. And if you look at other interventions with regard to tender search strategies on which there was no reporting, I can take you to the number of companies nurtured. There's no reporting on that. The number of future forums established. There's no reporting on that. The number of work plans developed. There's no reporting on that. The number of closeout reports, there's no reporting on that. The number of impact assessments, there's no reporting on that. The number of productivity champion strained. You have, yeah, there's a change in terms of what you have initially stated, that you intend to train 100 productivity champions, and here you have 110. Why the change in sort of targets midway or throughout the financial year? And regardless of the increase in the number of envisaged trainees, I find that only 6 of them have been trained. It is by any standards extremely low. But then I want to move on to the productivity organization solutions. Again, there are targets that you're not reporting on, namely the number of graduates trained. There's nothing mentioned about the number of graduates that you're supposed to have trained. The number of skills development facilitators trained. There's nothing that has been reported on. And I can continue, but Madam Chair, I think if we are going to be given sort of an assessment as to what has been happening within the entity, then it should be a fair reflection, it should be an honest reflection in terms of what's happening. And I don't get a sense that that some information is just not being sort of withheld from us and is not being reported on. Thank you.
I agree with you when you say we need to be given information, but I don't think we'll be correct when we assume that what we are given is not an honest reflection. Honorable Khawla.
It's my first time to attend the committees here.
By this, may I figure out the mic?
Thanks, Chair. Ma'am, let me also extend my greetings to colleagues and officials. Chair, I think I also want to write on the point that Honorable Nkonga raised on the intervention of productive I want to check if we can just get an indication indeed at what stage and whether companies apply for it for the Productive SA to intervene and check the productive status. But also, I want to check, once you have intervened, what happened after? Do you pull the company by the hand until at what stage? Until at what stage? And secondly, once you have assisted the company, do you guys put conditions? I mean, if you will have bailed out the company through assisting it, one will expect that you don't want the company to get back to where it is. I just want to check if you do put conditions. But also, I know there are big companies. You see, a productive SA can just give us an indication on the expertise. There are big companies that will deliberately restructure their companies into small entities, because some of them, they are doing that escaping liability, either from labor relations or employment equity or anything, doing it deliberately. And then later on, they will attribute that to economic distress. Now, I just want to check if Productive SA does have expertise to pick up such a clumsiness, if I may say. Because, of course, we know that whilst the climate might be, we could be either sitting in the hangover of the economic depression that we have, but the interest of business in wanting to maximize their profit, they will always look for ways. They will downsize their companies, and once they downsize their companies, make sure they get profit, and attribute that to economic distress just because they want productive SA to come. The other part that I want to talk to is the slide 5. I'm talking about page number 5. I think at some point you will need to get a case study. It's difficult to believe that that we're having an impact in terms of saving jobs, when every time we hear about job shedding and job losses. If you look at outcome 4, which you have referred to, in my view, that there is too much training happening in this country. And I take it as a duplication, because I just want to check whether the training that you are contributing to in terms of the skills needs, is it in isolation with the current training taking place in workplaces from CETAS and from all other entities that are engaged, or are we doing the same thing, or are we doing anything peculiar than what is currently happening in the light of, because otherwise I view it as a duplication. The notion that, for example, I was reading here, you are saying that, I just want to check the slides, I also have a problem of numbering here. If you look at the summative analysis, the paragraph 3, it talks about 42 jobs that have been saved, 42,240 jobs that have been saved. And my problem is that I can't pick up as to which sectors you are referring to, because I'm interested, because the reality is that there are sectors where the job setting is dominant into. So if you are saying to us there's been a save of jobs, say in manufacturing, which we know is shedding jobs, or you're saying that in farming or agriculture, I think we need to know exactly which sector. Otherwise, it remains a general statement. The last part, coming back to the point that I was raising, the last part about turnaround solution, you say that it protects vulnerable workers through the turnaround solution program. I don't know. Even there, I think we will need a case study as to where are we referring to. is because when you talk about vulnerable workers in South Africa, majority of
them... Can I make an intervention?
Yeah.
Don't discuss, ask questions.
Oh, okay.
The challenge with you is, despite my plea with time, you are discussing
instead
of zooming into questions.
No, it's fine. All I'm saying is that if we can just get specifically the turnaround strategies, saving jobs in which sectors we're referring to, which the statement is saying that vulnerable sectors, where are those sectors we're referring to? Thank you.
DG, this is the last lap for this report. We'll go to the next one for your responses.
Thank you, Chair. The honourable members have asked for quite a number of information. And it's information that is not here. So I would like to ask the committee to give the Productivity South Africa time to get this information, including the slides that the CEO was referring to that that is not included in the pack, so that we can then explain in detail what is it that we mean, including the case study that the Honourable Member Khaula is talking about, because we do have the information. It's just that it's not packaged in a nice fashion, so that the members could understand. So that would be my plea, Chairperson.
I don't think there's any harm in them doing their written submission, because we really want the information. Anyone against that proposal? Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In principle, I don't have difficulty with that proposal. But Madam Chair, if you can recall, is that when the annual performance plans were presented by Productivity South Africa at the beginning of the financial year, we experienced the same kind of problem. Productivity South Africa came here with slides that were incomplete, that were not very sort of legible in terms of the detail that was required, with information that was not there. And so the committee then decided that we will do exactly what Mr. Lamont is requesting, that we're going to ask him to go back and send this stuff on to them. Now, this would be the second time, Madam Chair, and there's no explanation for the 10,000 jobs that all of a sudden became 6,500 without any explanation as to how come and where this reduction of job savings have been sort of agreed upon. And in principle, I don't have a difficulty with them providing us with information, but certainly it cannot continue like this. Thank you, ma'am.
I move with that notion that in principle, you don't dispute or you are agreeing with the proposal. Did you get closer to the entity so that you can assist them when they are compiling their report? We understand their plight financially, because most of the time they'll complain of finances and all that, but when it comes to information, that need not be compromised when it is brought to the committee. Even with the 6,000 and 10,000 jobs, I think the further deliberations on that is to be contained in the information that you are going to provide. Can we go then to NEDLAC? Honourable Pascal, please.
Sorry, Chair, just before NEDLAC started, I wanted to also include that when the entities present in this particular instance, the productivity, that they should give us information that is user-friendly, or tables at least, especially with regards to the financials, so that we can clearly see and it's not difficult to interpret. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. We are to listen to NEDLAC now.
Chairperson, and good morning to the honorable members and colleagues. I will start with the presentation. I'll just try to move as quick as I can. I will deal with the NEDLAC, briefly, NEDLAC strategic objectives, the overview of performance, the program, quarter one, that's quarter one and quarter two, as requested, and the financial expenditure linked to organizational performance and challenges experienced and remedial action and impact realized through NEDLAC's work, and just briefly on the priorities that we've set for ourselves for this financial year. Just briefly on the strategic objectives of NEDLAC, it's effective governance and strategic leadership, provision of efficient and reliable back office support services, improve risk management and financial oversight, improve facilities management, office management, strengthening organizational culture and performance, effective engagement of draft policy and legislation within the framework of the NEDLAC Act, the Constitution and protocols, and also concluding matters under consideration within the framework of the Section 77 protocol as well as the NEDLAC protocol in respect of the other work. Promote social dialogue through communication, information and capacity building, and also compliance with the NEDLAC policy on constituency capacity building, budgeting and expense. In terms of our work as NEDLAC, we operate under three core functions. We have administration, the core operations, and constituency capacity building. Just to go briefly on our performance overview on quarter one, in administration, we had a target in indicators in quarter one of 9 targets. We achieved 8, and we did it. That meant we achieved overall 89% of that particular program. And core operations, annually we have the annual planned indicators of 34. We had a target of 10, we achieved 9, and that meant we had 91. And in terms of constituency capacity building funds, we had 3 targets there that we were planned, that we planned for. We achieved all of that. So basically the summary of performance for the first quarter was 91. And in terms of the Section 77 program, there were 4 matters that were tabled at NEDLAC. The number of matters that we achieved in the first quarter, we achieved 3. And the one that is still ongoing, that was still ongoing at the time, that was not reporting in quarter one was one of those targets. And on quarter two, the performance on quarter two wasn't as good as we anticipated. In terms of administration, we had a target of 14 in that quarter. We achieved 10. 4 were not achieved. The main reason for that was the fact that we had planned to have an unqualified audit opinion, and unfortunately we did not achieve that. And the other area was around the back office storage of information at NEDLAC. We could not do that because of the cost, the exorbitant cost that were involved with that. So that caused us not to be able to achieve our target today. And in core operations, we had targets, indicators reporting in that quarter were 21. We achieved 16 as well. So we did not achieve 5, which meant we also had 76% achievement. Again, there mainly it was around some pieces of legislation that was debated at NEDLAC. Unfortunately, we couldn't get responses and consensus among social partners in order to finalize that legislation. And one of that is, relates to the religious public holidays, which was debated. But then there was a feeling that we needed to have a socio-economic assessment done, which then meant that we had a delay of about 2 months, and then that target wasn't met. In terms of constituency capacity building funds, we've met the target there. For overall performance for the quarter, we had 76% achievement in that quarter. And again, in terms of the Section 77 applications that we received, three were tabled and two were successfully concluded, and one was still ongoing at the time, which was going to be finalized in the preceding, in the following quarters. I would now move to the financial expenditure linked to organizational performance. Just to outline briefly that our funding sources, we have grants from the National Department, interest earned from our call accounts and sundry income, which is mainly from sale of old and unused assets that NEDLAC sold. In terms of our revenue or income that we received a grant of 30.3 million rand from the department. We had an interest on our call account of 420,000 and sundry income of 132,000. So the total budget for the financial year is 30.8 million rand. And in terms of allocation, the biggest share goes to Program 1, which is administration at 21 million rand. And the next bigger share goes to Program 2, which is core operations at 5.9 million rand. And then the smaller portion, which is 3.9 million, goes to Program 3, which is capacity building funds. That's how we classified the budget for the year. In terms of economic classification, we have 13.8 million, which is the budget for remuneration or staff compensation, and 16.8 for goods and services, and 200,000 for payment for capital assets, and the total is 30.8. The actual expenditure as of 30 September was 13.9 million rand for all of that. So we had a variance of 16.9, which is to be spent in the two following quarters. And in terms of Program 1 expenditure information, we spent the budget for the year is 12.8 million rand. In the two quarters ending 30th September, we had spent 5 million rand on that, and goods and services were 7.9. We had spent 5 million again, and in terms of payment for capital assets, it was 200,000. We didn't spend anything there, so we have a variance. The total expenditure was 10.1 million, and the variance for the coming two quarters is 10.9 million. And in quarter two, compensation of employees, we don't have a budget there, and goods and services 5.9 million. And that's the budget, and the actual expenditure was 2.6 million rand. So in total, we we had a budget of 5.9 million and spent 2.6, and we have a variance of 3.2 million. And in terms of program three expenditure, we have a budget of, the total budget of 3.9 million, compensation of employees, 981,000, goods and services, 2.9 million rand budget, and the expenditure as at 30th September on compensation, we had 453,000, and on goods and services, 701. So in total, we spent 1.1 million rand, and we had a variance of 2.7 million rand. In summary, for all programs, in program one, we spent, we have a budget of 21 million. By the end of the second quarter, we had spent 10 million, which is 48% of that total. In program two, we had spent 2.6 million, which is 45%. And program three, we had spent 1.1, which was 29%. And just moving briefly to the challenges and remedial actions that we've put in place, the one challenge was the qualified audit opinion for the financial year 2015-2016. We have developed an action plan to address the findings of the AEG, and we are currently implementing that action plan, and we are confident that by the end of this financial year, we'd have managed to correct all the, and also to close all the findings that we identified. Resignation of staff that we also dealing with, and delays in the approval of staff benefits. That again, we hope we'll be able to finalize by the end of this financial year. And the last one also relates to staff in the finance department. Just moving quickly. The impact, I will just glance through a few of those. And in the first two quarters of 2016, we, in terms of engagements on the draft legislation and various sessions or engagements have been held by chambers of NEDLAC to address challenges facing the country. Examples that we've listed there was the interaction with the Minister of Finance, the medium-term budget policy, which provides inputs which are incorporated by the National Treasury in the medium-term budget policy statement, and session on financial inclusion held with Finmark Trust. The chamber comments are usually incorporated in FinScope, a research paper that Finmark produces and distributes to various institutions, and also a session with the Davis Tax Committee. The other intervention was the engagement on the National Minimum Wage and Labor Relations Amendments. By the end of the quarter, obviously, this was still in progress. We have now, currently, we've reached a point where all except one member of the social partners in NEDLAC have signed the agreement, and we hope it will be signed by the other party, the Trade Union Federation, within the next 2 weeks. We also anticipate that the outcomes of these engagements will result in bridging inequality gap, promote decent work, and ensure effective, productive, and stable labor market. We are also anticipating that these engagements will also necessitate amendments in legislation, primarily labor legislation, which would be the Labor Relations Act and the BCA, and probably the promulgation of the new act, which could be called the National Minimum Wage Act or something to that effect. And the priorities that we have identified for ourselves at the beginning of the financial year was to finalize labor relations in Durban engagement process, which I am confident that by the end of the financial year would have come to an end in terms of NEDLAC interaction or operations in that. and it will then be moving to the next stage, which is policy formulation and enactment of legislation. Expediting the implementation of the audit action plan, we are in the process of finalizing that, and we are confident that by the end of the financial year we'll be able to report positively on that. And enhancing corporate governance through compliance with the NEDLAC Act, Constitution, protocols, and other applicable government regulations. That I'm sure we are also moving very closely to achieving. And also in terms of building the capacity of the Secretariat and increased staff retention, which would include building capacity of NEDLAC to do monitoring and evaluation, which we haven't been doing. Continue to improve achieving targets within set timeframes, although we rely mainly on our social partners to achieve the targets that we have set. We try by all means to ensure that we get the correct level of representation at NEDLAC, which has improved quite a lot, and the turnaround time is also improving. And also expedite engagement on draft legislation and policy tabled for consideration at NEDLAC, including comprehensive social security and retirement reforms. This month we'll be having the first meeting of the comprehensive social security task team at NEDLAC, and hopefully within the next 18 months we'll be able to finalize the work of comprehensive social security. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That's the report, members. I'm now inviting questions, but as we are bringing up our questions, please let's shorten the preamble, because I think they are the ones that consumed our time in the previous one. I'm seeing Honorable Bakram, Honorable Ollis, any other hand? Honorable von Skalkwijk, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this report. I appreciate it. I'm going to get straight to the point. The discussions that you're having at NEDLAC, and I want to go straight to the impact realized through NEDLAC's work and your special sessions. First and foremost, and I've been making this point now a few times, the discussions you have are not of legislative impact at all. And in fact, we recall on the last occasion when there were some major changes to the Labor Relations Act, there were agreements that came out of NEDLAC, and those agreements were turned on their head when it came to Parliament. Do you think that they've got any impact on what you're discussing at all? You seem to have reached some sort of agreement, bar for probably the biggest player that hasn't signed it. Where is that? Is that just a talk shop? Is it a toy telephone? Where is that taking us, other than everyone just getting excited about discussing and spending a lot of money on it? The other thing is, I know that a lot of other things other than the minimum wage have been discussed, like for instance discussions about the trade unions having secret ballots before going on strike, and changes to some of the strike legislation, and even, in fact, compulsory mediation and possibly even litigation before going on the strike. Now, all that's been discussed, but somehow the public has been kept in the dark. And it seems that there have been some sort of announcement that the agreements have been reached, and yet we know nothing about it. In fact, in this committee, we know nothing about it. And I find that a little bit disconcerting, in that none of that is shown to us, especially not the minutes of those meetings. I think that would be wise to let us see it. Thank you.
Honorable Ollis.
Thank you, Chair. Just three things. First of all, I asked last time when you were here if you could give us an update on feedback that you've got from SAPS about their investigations into the NEDLAC forensic audit case. Could you just tell us if you've gotten feedback and what that feedback is, please? Secondly, I just want to add to what my colleague has said about industrial action and strike violence. NEDLAC was asked, I think, by the Deputy President to consider that, and we haven't got any feedback as to whether you are dealing with it. Are discussions ongoing? Is there a draft policy document coming forward? Where are we? Are you drafting legislation or what? And then thirdly, we've seen in the media that small business organizations are requesting to get representation at NEDLAC. We've seen, I think is it NIASA or something like that, has been lobbying and so on. And so my question to you is, at what level does NEDLAC and the social partners currently interact with SMMEs, spaza shops, small enterprises, welders, electricians, plumbers, people who are not represented by the big business organizations such as BUSA and blah, blah, blah? How do you interact with them? How do you get buy-in from small and micro enterprises? And if you're going to tell me that you do, and it's in the community chamber, is it called, or the social partner that represents the community, what organizations are represented that represent small business at NEDLAC? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. When looking at the qualified order that you received in the 2015-16 financial year, you indicate that you have action plans in place. Can you give us an update on when looking at, you are already in quarter three, you finished quarter three, what is the updated efforts or the results of the action plans that you've put in place, and would you can you foresee or tell us in terms of the projections of the audit outcome that might happen at the end of the financial year that we will see better results? I have a particular concern with regards to the low spending rates of across the programs, especially when you look at program 3, 29% spending rate, and you've been complaining about your insufficient funds that you're receiving, but yet you are very low in spending those monies. Can you give us an elaborate explanation on what's happening actually there? Thank you, Chair.
DG and your team, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. with regards to the discussion in NEDLAC, whether it has legislative impact or not, whether it's a talk show, I would answer in this way, that it's not a talk shop. What we discuss at NEDLAC is actually implemented by and large by parliament or government, so to speak. And in this particular case, the discussion regarding the national minimum wage and labor market reforms, COSATU is the only outstanding federation that has not signed, and we are very optimistic they will be signing. In their report, they never said they wanted to get any fresh mandate. They wanted to report to their governance structures, and that we expect to happen within the next 2 weeks. And after that, we will obviously have a formally signed document. But there was a subsidiary question in respect of that Parliament, especially this committee, has never had sight of the agreement. I think that should be oversight on our part and the department, and I'm sure after this we'll be able to send the signed agreement, because it covers most of the issues that the members have raised. For example, the issue of the strike ballot, that was one, it has been finalized, it has been agreed that at the beginning of a strike, all unions will engage in a strike ballot, and the only thing that is remaining, obviously, is the legal process, the amendment of the law to effect those changes that have been agreed, and hopefully we'll have buy-in from all stakeholders, especially COSATU, which is still outstanding at this point. There was a question regarding the SAPS and feedback regarding the forensic investigation. We have written to the South African Police Service as well as the NPA to get feedback or progress report from them. They promised us, the advocate that is handling the matter in the NPA promised that we will get a written report from them on the 23rd of February, which is next week. We are awaiting that report from them. And there was a question also on the representation of small business in NEDLAC. I understand that they want to be represented, especially when the matters that pertain to them are discussed. There is a process at NEDLAC, the protocol how any constituency can get involved. I'm sure members will be aware that the business sector, that's where they will belong, is represented by BUSA and represented by BBC. But BUSA and BBC also represent a lot of other other organizations. For example, under BBC you have NAFCOC, and NAFCOC represents the smallest organization or businesses that are there in the country. But if there are others that would wish to be represented, obviously there is a process that they should follow. To apply for that, they can apply to NEDLAC, and we will obviously have to table that to the constituency, in this case to the business constituency. We have BUSA, we have BBC at NEDLAC. So in our view, we thought everybody was represented, but if there are those that still feel they are not adequately represented, that can still be entertained. In terms of qualified audit and the updates on the action plan and the projections of the audit outcome, we will be having an interim audit that will be done by the Auditor General starting on Monday next week. So we are hopeful that we'll be able to get a clearer indication where we stand. But in accordance with what we currently have, the major remaining issue in terms of our audit currently is the formulation of ICT policies. Those policies have been formulated and presented to a number of structures, for example, the ICT committee at NEDLAC. There will be some of them will be presented, the final batch will be presented to the executive committee, which is the final decision-making structure at NEDLAC, on the 24th of this month, and we hope after that we would have satisfied or closed that particular finding of developing policy. The one aspect that is still remaining is this external or outside backup support that we needed to have. Unfortunately, because of financial constraints, we could not get that through CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, because the costs were just too high, over 650,000 rand. So we are exploring other avenues in discussion with the AG and National Treasury and the Department. They agreed that we can pursue other service providers. And we are also hopeful that by the end of this financial year, at least we would have done one offsite backup, which was one of the findings last year, which was recurring in all our quarters. And in terms of spending rate, with specific reference to Program 3, that problem has been corrected now. Actually, everybody at NEDLAC, and this has been discussed in the governance structures, MENCO as well as EXCO, that the community constituency is spending too much on their budget. They had to hold back. So by the end of this financial year, I'm sure we would have spent the entire budget in that program, because they've scaled up their programs. And there was also one big expenditure, especially on the labor side. They have what they call a labor school, which is convened in January. It's a three-day workshop for everybody that comes from labor who participates, from the three federations who participate in the NEDLAC processes. So that's where the bulk of their expenditure is, in January. So that has been done now. So we are hopeful that by the end of the financial year we'll be okay with that. Thanks, John.
Thank
Thank you. Saying Honorable Begram and Honorable Mkongi, I think the DG also wants to add something.
Chair, just to add that I've noted that the committee has called us on the 24th of February to specifically brief the committee on the national minimum wage process. And I think that more details will be will be given to the committee on that date. I've just received the program.
Honorable Begram and then Honorable Kong.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. The first thing that just arises out of what the DGs had to say, it's interesting, he knows our program, we don't. Maybe our chairperson has gone rogue, but if we could get that program sent to us, and so we know when Parliament is going to be sitting and when the department is going to come speak to us, we'd like to put it in our diaries as well. So thank you for alerting us, DG. Following up on this, the answers we've had from NEDLAC, this is very good, and I understand that you've now undertaken to let us have copies of that agreement. I take it you'll send it this afternoon to Mr. Zakaso, who will then send it on to us. I presume he will have got Zolani's email address. If you could send it on to us so I can have a look at it this afternoon. I wouldn't like to delay this for another month or two. And then finally, I'm very pleased and in fact quite happy that you believe that the agreements that are arising out of NEDLAC will be to a large degree honoured by the signing parties. It wasn't the case last time, so we won't be let down this time, and that Kosatu won't run off into the distance and make representations to someone else behind NEDLAC's back. So I'm very pleased that you've got faith, and we of little faith will watch it carefully. That's the one thing. The other thing is, you think Kosatu will sign within the next 2 weeks? Maybe once they have signed, or if they raise any issues, you could alert Mr. Zakaso again, because I have little faith in this, and I'd like to be able to keep my finger on that pulse. So I wish you much strength to your arm in that agreement. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Rather have faith or die very early. Honorable Mkongi.
No. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I didn't want to ask questions, but there's something that is always concerned me. I am concerned about the comprehensive social security reform. And it's still a work in progress. I still remember from 2009 to 2014, it was the fourth parliament. Before that, it was the third parliament when this matter was introduced. And I see now that we have added retirement reform in the context of the social security, which perhaps was not part of then. What makes this thing not to go off the ground?
DG, what's causing the wheels to be stuck?
I think the executive director indicated that there is now movement. The government tabled its proposals at NEDLAC, and NEDLAC took a decision that a technical committee must be established to process the government's proposal. So, as the executive director of NEDLAC indicated, that work is now underway to get the matter finalised.
Honorable Mkong.
This is not answering my question. Now, the problem is government. Because the issue is that what makes it not to be off the ground? Because three parliaments have been discussing this matter. Talking about the third parliament, the fourth parliament, now is the fifth parliament. Where is the problem?
If I can answer that, perhaps we won't be able to go to the history, but for the first time, We know that even at NEDLAC, everybody is complaining that this thing has been discussed for over 9 years now. But eventually, on the 25th of November last year, government, you know, government has many arms. Government, in its many arms, presented a position paper at NEDLAC on the 25th of November. And as a result of that, we have established, everybody understands their role now, we've established this technical task team, which will be meeting with effect from next week. So we are hopeful that it will not take that long. There are many reasons, everybody will have their own opinions as why the delays. But finally, that paper that was supposed to be presented maybe 9 years ago was finally presented last year in November.
Thank you. You see, DG, this thing of saying I'm only 2 years in the department does not work. We want responses that date back to 2009. So go back to the archives. But I think they have tried their best to respond to what Honorable Mkhonge is asking. Thank you. We'll then step down and go to CCMA. I hope productivity is a stronger pattern. If you give us information, we don't interrogate. But if you just entice us with information, we probe. Thank you.
Chairperson, and honourable members. I will be mindful of time, but be precise as much as possible. With one only request, Chair, at the end of my presentation, just...
I suspect you are far from the mic, because I'm struggling to hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Better now?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. question time, Chair. I'll just deal on the key aspects because I just presume that the members have read the presentations, but my team and myself will answer all questions afterwards. Why I can't, on technical questions, I request permission that my team assist in provision of information, which is the reason why I brought them here, with your permission.
You don't even want to talk to your document?
No, I am.
Oh.
I am. I'm just saying in the case of questions.
Okay. Continue then.
Thank you. Chairperson, on the first quarter, as requested, we on the face of it, you will see that in terms of the total targets that we've set, which is 18 targets for the first quarter, we achieved 12, and 6 were not achieved. And just as a start to just explain that the not achieved in the first and the second quarter, I can give an assurance to the committee that it has nothing to do with non-performance. We will give reasons to if required to provide those, but work was done. If I may move to the next slide, the rest of the items have been achieved and done, so I'm not going to go through that. The important issue on the second slide that deals with the finances in terms of the first quarter, the one important or two important provisions I need to just reflect, it is the third bullet, which reflects that in terms of our LRA, there are certain services by law that we should charge on and also try to, you know, generate revenue to the extent that it can assist the fiscus. And as at the first quarter, we have therefore accumulated, in terms of the service that we rendered, 1.6 million. And then just an explanation in the last bullet that the revenue, amongst other things in the main, you find that there's a number of companies who require information on the work that we do and the expertise that we provide, and lastly, the money will come from there. And also you'll have like your section 188A, which is the inquired by arbitrator, and there's a prescribed fee that is charged in terms of the basic conditions in the LRA, and therefore we charge in terms of that. Hence, it is reflecting on our income statement under the income generated. Those are the figures. Into the next slide. an important slide, in, or sorry, the third bullet key. The figures there, I think, are quite clear in terms of our investment and where we are as at the date of the June. Then if you go to the third bullet of that slide, of great importance is to note that the cash and cash equivalents as closed at 250 million rand, which is key, equivalent to 3.8 months cash turnover ratio, which then also consolidates in as far as the health of the organization there. And then the last bullet, we are expected in terms of our finances that we must at all times be at 1:1 on our assets and our liabilities. And we can just happily announce that we are sitting at 2.8:1. Therefore, we are exceeding that requirement as expected there. Into the next slide, Chairperson, I will not go into every part of that. The one important part, therefore, that is important that I must deal with, it is the one that relates to jobs, because there has been a couple of questions that members, honourable members, have raised on the job-saving function of the CCMA and its relationship to their productivity, as I. And I also noted the question that Honourable Ollis has raised in terms of the figures that were raised. I think it might assist if I provide a bit of an explanation there. If you look at the brackets on that 39%, it tells you that its case is referred to the CCMA. So therefore, it means that the figures that you see and the jobs saved, it is limited to cases that were referred to us. So therefore, it is correct, the question that you asked, that if I give this figure, and I cannot say that's the total market, because therefore the small-scale dismissals, those that also may be large but not referred to us, if you look at the total picture and numbers, it will not reflect. So the numbers will not actually add up. So at least that, I think, to some degree will also assist in explaining the difference and in terms of the question that was asked earlier on in our relationship with productivity as a. And I might as well just deal with a question also that was raised regarding the business rescue and the relationship issue. The best scenario that we can see, Madam Chair, is when you have productivity SA, you have CCMA, you have UIF, that we consolidate our efforts in terms of the consolidation of data. So that if we cumulatively say, job saved in first quarter, it must reflect clearly what was saved in CCMA processes and what was saved in PSA processes and any other process that is running, so that you can get a broader picture on exactly what the status of the job saving is. So that when we provide our own and PSA provides its own, it appears if it's a bit disorganized. So I think to a large degree it might assist. But it will be quite difficult to get a total picture on exactly the actual figure of how many jobs are lost, because others are not appearing within our radar. So that is quite an important submission that I should make. In addition to that, at the CCMA processes, issues such as business rescue don't feature there because of the nature of our work as defined in the LRA, because our functions in job saving is in terms of Section 189, and it defines the stage at which we must intervene. And critically, it is a stage at which the final decision to dismiss has not been made, so that the idea of job saving must not come after the damage is caused. Therefore, our relationship with the PSA, just to give you a practical example, that if we have an approach that 6,000 employees are facing job losses, and in our assessment, other than our statutory function, we realize that the problem in this company is because of its production, is it because of its operations, then that's when our relationship with the PSA becomes important. Then I can pick up a phone and say, CEO, this company you can save. Because if PSA can achieve in saving the company, then you don't have to deal with the retrenchment. So then overall picture in terms of that partnership, it does help and it does assist. And then the payment that is made subsequent to that in trying to save a company, that's where UIF becomes relevant. That, look, we need to retrain these employees because they are being retrenched because the company is introducing new technological advancements which the employees are not trained in. Therefore, how about then we provide money from UIF to train those employees so that they can be re-employed? Then at least it works. And part of that process, it includes some measure of guarantee that must be made that if you're saying the employees are losing their jobs because of technological problems, so if we provide training for a period of 6 months and pay them in that period, can you then re-employ? Then the true meaning of job seeking finance application. But you can only achieve that if you have that effective and efficient partnership between those that have a role to play in the overall job saving. Because it's an effort we have to put, because if you look at the triple crisis, this part contributes into the unemployment rate. It also contributes into saving poverty, or at least mitigates the extent to which it happens. So it's a direct contribution into that. Business rescue is intended just to save the company in terms of the Companies Act, but it's not within our fold. But I think a partnership also with business rescue practitioners in the companies that they deal with, it must be part of that mix so that it can have an overall impact on job saving as well. The next slide, I will not talk to you, Chairperson, with your permission. It is just the statistics that we provide on the capacity building that we do throughout the country. So every portion of it gives you numbers, where we've been and what we've done. The next slide is the second quarter. In the second quarter, Madam Chair, out of 19 targets that were planned, we achieved 13 and 5 were not achieved, which gives you a total of 68%. If causes of non-achievement are sought, we will provide an explanation if need be. If I may proceed to the next slide, which is the second quarter financial position, I wish to refer the committee to this, to the second last bullet and the last bullet. I have presented earlier about the revenue rendering services of the CCMA. I mentioned 1.something million rand that is generated, and as at that date, it stood at 2.5 million rand, which I think is a good thing from the cost generation perspective. And then as at the end of the second quarter, I'm now at the last bullet, the total expenditure was under the total quarterly budget by 0.1. That's the point I just wanted to emphasize. If need be, the CFO may add later if the question arises. Into the next slide. I can confirm, Madam Chair, from the CCMA financial position, that our financial position is healthy. Just to give an assurance to the committee, the rest is just important details just to share with the committee. And then also, part of the income generation streams that we use, if you look at the third bullet, it is an investment of the funds that we're not using at a certain point, that we invest them. And then after investing in terms of what we expected on the percentage of increase or return that we get, it is now cited there on the third bullet. And then of importance also on the second last bullet on the cash and cash equivalent that I spoke about earlier in the first quarter, in the second quarter is sitting at 3.6 months cash turnover ratio, which is, I think, it's an important point to raise. And finally, in the last bullet, in terms of a 1:1 liquidity ratio, we're sitting above that healthy at 3.5:1. To the next slide. There's nothing specific, Chair, I want to emphasize there. If, with your permission, just to mention maybe in the first bullet on that slide, the rollover amount, it is purely because of certain projects that were beyond our control that we could not implement in that particular period, such as the procurement processes, where you plan in terms of your procurement plan that we're going to have these projects done, your committees don't sit and there's delay, and it's those type of issues. But it has got nothing to do with something that we could not do from our side. Into the next slide. Chairperson, from time to time, Madam Chair, we provide this dashboard just to give you an overall picture of all the activities that we do in the main so that you see what the CCMA is doing, where we are at, and giving specific information. You will see there on arbitration, on our strikes. An interesting question was asked earlier on in as far as the violent strikes. Part of the annual performance plan of 2017-2018, we've taken a decision that we're going to use our research department to investigate thoroughly as to the causes why we have violent strikes and try to come up with some recommendations. It's quite a daunting task and a very serious task, but with all the stakeholders and partners that can assist us to answer the question and contribute to that process to the extent that we can, we're going to do so. Our settlement rate is sitting at 76%, above the 70% that we've set nationally, so we're achieving that. On jobs, I must also emphasize that the prevail at that quarter and the second quarter, in fact, the entire financial, the target that we set on the jobs that we want to save on those referred to the Commission was 20%. in our 2017-2018 plan, because we have overachieved on that target, we have increased about to 35% on the annual performance plan that is starting on the 1st of April 2017. If I may proceed to the next slide. Again, for the second quarter, it is reflecting our capacity building and outreach that we're doing at the Commission. I will not go into the figures. If that's a question, we can respond to. Right. Madam Chair, this is just a progress report on our annual targets. Importantly, we as the Commission, in terms of our performance information and systems, we've established a monitoring and evaluation system with regard to our performance and service delivery. And we're tracking that mid-quarter, for example, to say if this quarter we're expected to do X, and in the middle of that quarter we've got a system that checks how far are we achieving what we're supposed to be achieving. It's the same process that we're adopting when we're dealing with our audit findings in order to ensure that we track them properly. The third bullet is the most important one for our purposes as well, I think for the purposes of Parliament as well, because when we receive the notice that when we come to this session, we must bring the Chief Audit Executive and the Audit Committee Chairperson in order to give an assurance to this committee that the performance information that we give you is in fact valid. I can confirm to this House that all our performance information and the one I've just presented, it is information that is audited by our internal audit. And that's where sometimes if there are certain targets also that are not achieved, it is a result of the internal audit will say, well, this is how you planned it, this is how you were supposed to do it, you didn't do it that way, therefore it did not achieve. Despite the fact that there would be work done by way of interpretation because there are technical indicators and all of that. So that's part of that process that we're happy about. And if the chairperson, Madam Chair, if you so require that you be given directly assurance from the CAE or the Chief Audit Executive or the Committee Chair, they are here available to do so, and they have a prepared presentation that they can give to this committee in order to achieve what was in that notice. Madam Chair, I will, in the next slide, this is an important slide for us as well, in that it gives more detail now on each and every the targets that I've spoken about, on how they link up to the government outcomes. So that whatever we do and what we want to achieve, it mustn't be in the vacuum. It must reflect exactly how it links to the government outcomes and plans. Just to pick as an example, without going through all of them, the first one that we spoke about the jobs, you will note that in terms of the figures that we give 39%, but if you translate that into numbers, it tells you that the number of jobs saved at the 30th of November is 21,000 jobs, which then mainly contributes into the 0.1% in terms of the overall unemployment rate. So in other words, without that function, the rate will be higher. So in our calculations, using the correct formulas, that's what it reflects. So what follows after that is under each and every one of them. I will not take you through all of those, but if the committee wishes me to go into the detail and deal with that, we will do so. And finally, just also on the last one, that relates to the partnerships. These partnerships I'm talking about, it is the PSA, for example, because we've got a signed MOU. We've got a signed MOU with the International Labour Organization in terms of our exchange programs, in terms of all of that. But most importantly, it is also the relationship and partnership we have with the Sheriff's Board that assists us to ensure that the awards that we issue are being implemented. And therefore, we, and assisted by the Department of Labor in terms of funding here, that for all the employees who are deserving and unable to afford the cost of the sheriff to execute their awards against employers who do not want to execute their awards, then the Sheriff's Board and ourselves, we then assist those employees and ensure that those awards are achieved. So we believe it is an important achievement. And as at that, the 6th of November 2016, we had assisted 1,740 employees. So, Madam Chair, it goes on to the next slide. It gives under each item there, and it tells you which outcome in terms of government output is linked to, and it is those details. Sorry. And if you may proceed to the next slide, all those slides that come after that, they link up to each and every one of them. I'm not going through each and every one of them, but if there's a need that arises, I will do so. If we can proceed to the slide that deals with the challenges. That one. Q. key to this is the first one. One thing that we are unable to arrest, it is the growth rate of cases referred to the CCMA, and the rate sits at the moment at 5%. One of the things we've decided to do also with the team, but not as part of our annual performance plan, but part of our operational plans ordinarily, is we try to investigate. On the look of it, if you look at our statistics, it will tell you the main streams, where it's coming from. It will tell you from the retail sector, we've got this number. From the mining sector, this is the number. We've got full stats and detail on that. So at least on the face of it, you can see where the cases are coming from, which then feeds to tell you how you reach the 5%. But the investigation is sought to understand behind those referrals in those specific sectors, what leads them to be like that. So even if the most referring being the mining sector, let's have an intelligence and understand why is mining sector the most referring. So clearly it's indicative of some problem because it then represents the overall referral rate to our cases at the CCMA. So we are investigating that. We are hoping at some point, maybe next year this time, we might have some report that we can present to this house to show that. The second part, I think we've dealt with it on the large-scale detachment. It continues to be a challenge because we need to apply resources there, especially in terms of the experience and specialized commissioners to deal with retrenchment, with the specialized field. So that there, in terms of the capacity, we need to increase that, not in terms of the knowledge of the retrenchment and also the number of commissioners that needs to do that. You will note also in terms of our 2017-18 plan, we've also intended to increase the number of female commissioners, because the numbers of female commissioners who are participating in these cases is very low. So we want to increase the number of women who do large-scale dismissals. We are sure that in terms of the targets that we've set, that we are able to do so. We have a plan already that we've agreed on this week that will take effect on the 1st of April 2017. On the outlying areas, this is an accessibility issue, that every citizen who has a grievance that is within employment law and within the jurisdiction of the CCMA should be able to reach us. Not because, or if they are unable to reach us, not because we don't have an office there, or because one of the important projects that we have is to work with the Department of Labor, that we use those labor centers for us to, you know, to do our processes well. And we've started the rollout process already, which is quite an advanced stage. Others are fully fledged and working. But one of the things we're hoping to achieve is we have like a mobile truck, a truck that has a commissioner, that has a case management officer, that has an interpreter, that you can take a truck anywhere in the rural areas and be able to assist persons to the extent that we're not able to build offices because of finances then. So this is very important. Also that we try to spread that the offices of the CCMA must not just be in town. We must be able to open them in the townships as well. So it's one of the new innovations we're trying to explore to the extent that resources allow. The last bullet, Madam Chair, it has to do with our governance as the Commission. We have taken this as a serious issue. It is one of the five priorities that we have, that we must improve governance, and governance broadly, governance, compliance, and risk. So we have established a full unit there, which is not fully established in the sense that you have compliance section, but sits in a different department. You've got governance that sits with the board secretary and risk sitting elsewhere. So we're constituting quite a very effective system there in order to ensure that when it comes to governance, compliance, and risk, we must be strong so that we may avert potential issues of non-compliance. Madam Chair, this is the presentation of the CCMA to the extent that we thought we could present it in a manner that I think is understood by the members. If there are any questions, I will take the questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additions, DJ? Okay. Over to your members. Honorable Odis, Honorable America, Honorable Khaula, Honorable Van Skalkwyk, Honorable Mkongi. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. It sounds really good. CCMA does great work, and I think I've always commended them on the work that they do. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's certainly a very good effort and I think that you do great work. I've got one case that I want to refer to you if I can get your number after the meeting. It's helping a worker, as I'm sure you will. I have five quick questions. The first one is, needs a little introduction. The presentation is great, and my colleagues in the DA tell me that you're doing great work too, so I think that you're doing great work, but there's one danger. Let me call it the Lucky Montana approach to reporting, and that's what worries me. I used to be the Shadow Minister of Transport, and I sat on the Transport Committee, and Lucky Montana came and produced reports on what PRASA was doing. They were fantastic reports, and Lucky Montana had this way of energizing the room and telling you how exciting it was, and the future was going to be fantastic, and the train stations in the future were going to be like Rolls-Royce train stations, and the trains were going to be fast and clean and safe and efficient. And we had Dr. Mtimkulu come and tell us about all the plans that were coming. And then we discovered that Dr. Mtimkulu wasn't actually a doctor.
Don't,
and that his master's degree wasn't in engineering.
Times for your input.
And then the trains fell off the rails, you know. So that's what worries me here. It sounds fantastic. But there's one thing that worries me, and that is that you are not following Treasury guidelines when you report on the financials to this committee. This is fluff. It's great. You're liquid. You've got lots of cash. There's no financial problems with the big numbers. So with the big numbers, it's great. And your audit people are here to confirm that those big numbers are correct. So I'm assuming they're correct. But there's no comparison of any line items with the budget and the expenditure on anything. Not a single thing in this report. So I can't tell if you've overspent on the director's cars, or if you've underspent on office furniture or computers, or whether, you know, you've given the platinum card to Mr. Kalipi to buy a Ferrari shirt from the Ferrari. I can't tell that. I can't tell any of that because you've given me big globular figures. So can please, DG, can we ask the entities to report with the Treasury guidelines? And that usually has budget for this, expenditure for the line item is that, and then we go, okay, it is great, because it looks fantastic, and I congratulate you on it looking really well. I'm just worried that the train's going to fall off the rails, and then we've got to sue the Spanish company Foslo because it went wrong, and I can't tell that from the report. The other ones are quite quick, Chair. You've got a study unit on violent strikes and why violence occurs. That's fantastic. I commend you on that. Have you read the COSATU 2012 member survey on the members' views on strikes, because it has a startling finding that the members surveyed in 37 districts around the country, 51 or 52% believed that violence was necessary during a strike or a protest march in order to achieve the aims of the strike. So there's a perception problem there, and they've listed it in their report, so it might be something you want to look at. Thirdly, office rentals has been a thing that's dogged the CCMA. I believe that last year people were suspended over the Durban lease. Can you just update us on that? Has it been fixed? Are the people fired? Are they reinstated? Is the rental problem there been sorted out? Have you got any other rental office problems? And then your last line, your governance processes could be improved. Before you got to that line, I was ready to applaud by the end of your presentation, but then you told me that your own governance processes might need to be improved. So maybe you can just elaborate a little bit on what you mean by that. What things do you want to tighten up, and why have you not already done them? Thanks, Chair.
Okay. I just want to make an addition. I'll give you, Honorable America. As you read the 2012 COSATU report on shop stewards, continue and read the resolution of Congress on the same matter. Same Congress, the 2012, because those were the views of the General Secretary that were tested in Congress, so that you know the authenticity of the survey you are referring to. Honorable Merrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to, Director, I'd like to echo the sentiments expressed from my colleague, Mr. Hollis. the difficulty I have with this presentation, it is very nicely packaged and presented, but it's very thin on detail. We have broad strokes of strategic outcome one, strategic outcome two, but within that there is so much more that make up that particular outcome. Now that's missing in the presentation, and I think that if one, because it makes it difficult to look at the annual performance plans and compare where within the process we are at this stage. So perhaps, you know, I have no doubt that, you know, what is presented is authentic and is correct, but a little bit more detail in compliance with the AEPP will certainly sort of make it much easier for us to assess the performance of the entity. Thank you.
Honorable Khawla.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, my first one, I remember in the last meeting we had with CCMA, we raised concerns relating to Northern Cape, and amongst them it was the issue of outsource cleaning services and also the security. I'm not sure if we can get an indication or a feedback. I'm raising it because I think before the end of the year, I saw an advert in Joburg. I think it was a Joburg office advertising for the position of a cleaner. And I assume that it was the beginning to integrate. So if I can just, talk to that. The other one is the issue of the offices, because you also raised the concern regarding the distances, especially in that Northern Cape, you see. And I think we threw some advice regarding mobile offices and stuff. So if you can also talk to that. But the other question that I want to raise, there is this thing that is out about the enforcement of arbitration, especially by applicants who can afford sheriffs. I just want to check if the CCMA is doing anything about that, because it's key. Then I see you have referred to slides on capacity building, and I understand that now CCMA is using those universities. It has outsourced capacity building programs to universities that I believe might have been accredited by CCMA itself. But I want to check what is the benefit if CCMA can just indicate to us, now that you have changed from the internal arrangement of capacity building, now that you are outsourcing it to those universities, what is the benefit, especially on the commissioner training, specifically on those universities? And also, is there some sort of a commissioning structure, seeing that the universities are using the material of the CCMA? You see, if you can just get... The other point, the commissioners that have been trained internally before, that are with you, is there an arrangement in terms of linking the training that they've done internally to some sort of an NQF alignment arrangement? Is there a process that the CCMA is engaging to RPL those commissioners? For example, if you had commissioners that are in the CCMA, obviously they've got experience, but the capacity building that they were engaged in is internally, and therefore there was no NQF arrangement. But those that are now attending the one that is outsourced, the understanding is that obviously those universities, because they are accredited, their training is NQF aligned. And then my last point, I see there's a trend of, which is good in terms of the awards of commissioners on reinstatement and re-employment, which is good, but there is still large ones of monetary compensation. I just want to say, check if perhaps we cannot find a way of emphasizing and making sure that we have more of those awards of reinstatement and re-employment rather than monetary settlement. Thanks, Chair. Thanks.
Can I double check, Honorable Khawula? Did you get your employment back as a shop steward? Honorable Francis.
Thank you, Chairperson. When listening at your comment, I'll rather refrain from the other questions that I wanted to ask. I would like to follow the trend of Honorable Ollis with regards to the reporting format, especially when looking at the expenditure trends. It would be very helpful to see detailed trends with regards, detailed report in terms of your different programs, so that we can really see whether you've underspended, overspended, and have a better insight. So if you can really help us in that regard. I know that I've complained previously about the forms that's not in the language of origin of some people, especially with regards to my people in the Northern Cape. And I've seen during quarter one you've translated the forms in Afrikaans as well as isiZulu. I want to thank you for that one. When looking at the 39% of jobs that were saved compared to employees facing retrenchments, in both quarters you're mentioning that percentage. I just want to make sure, is that the correct figure in both instances, or is that a mistake? The other thing is, Chairperson, in terms of the awareness campaigns, awareness programs, there's a lot of people that you've helped to understand the law better and know their rights, including the outreach services in terms of the awareness campaigns. I've seen that it increased. So hopefully that will bear fruits in our communities, especially our rural communities. In terms of doing the right thing, you've mentioned in quarter one and also in quarter two about the CCMA investigations in terms of complaints against the commissioners. Can we have some kind of figure? Because you were just mentioning about complaints, and then you say in quarter two that you've acted against five commissioners. We just want to have a sense of how many complaints are you referring when looking at those things. I want to pause there, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mkongi.
No, thank you very much, President. One of the questions is going to be an addition to Honorable Van Skalvig on 39%. At the back of your pages, you are explaining, and then you said that you saved 21,000 out of the overall percentage of unemployment in South Africa. You saved 20, yeah. I will go back there. Outcome 4. The CCMA saved 39% of jobs of employees facing retrenchment, translating into more than 21,000 jobs saved. At the end of 30th November 2016, the national unemployment rate stood at 27.1%. The jobs saved by the CCMA assisted in keeping the unemployment rate down to 0.1. So that necessarily means
the 21%, I mean the 39% or 21,000 jobs saved, they talk to the possible overall unemployment rate that South Africa was going to have. So you saved 21,000. This is what I'm trying to raise. Now, the question, if you are saying it was 39% in the first quarter, there was an unemployment rate of that particular quarter. Do you understand the chance? And then when you go to quarter two, there could be an increase in unemployment rate or a decrease, no? Or it could be constant. Now, that is the explanation that I need, the meaning of that 39% in both those quarters. Two, I think you are aware that we are not dealing with accounting officers here. We are dealing with members of parliament. I think that is very critical because language is very important. You speak about accumulative capital and material capital. You didn't explain that in any slide. What do you mean about both? Whether the meaning of the material capital is the transfer or that you receive from the department, and accumulative capital is what you get from the fees people are paying you for your services. So it's very important because we need to be with you in what we are raising to people. Because I always say, you know, it's nice sometimes because other people, they sit in offices. Some of us, we have constituencies. And we have people there on the ground that we represent. And we must be able to explain these things and not take them for granted. You have spoken about days. Are those working days or are they calendar days? Let me go to that slide. Both of those slides that you had, you said on average, the CCMA took 23 days to deal with conciliation cases as compared to the targeted 30 days. Now the question, are those working days or they are calendar days? There's the arbitration cases also. You know, so I think you need to explain those particular things. Yeah. If I didn't forget some of my questions, my chairperson, perhaps I can make a follow-up. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, department.
Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you for the questions. On the Treasury guideline, that must be followed. There's no debate about it. In the next presentations, all the presentations that are regulated will be done in terms of the regulation, just to give an assurance on that. We thank you very much for the note on the violent strikes. As we start the process from the 1st of April, we will have a look at the report, the COSATU report of 2012, including the Congress resolutions. We will do so. Yes, in terms of the Durban lease, one of the important things I can report that has happened other than the disciplinary hearings is that one of the findings that came out of that was the procurement of a certain portion of the building which cost about 6 million rand. And that matter was heading for litigation. What we then did, took a decision that we must engage the landlord because it was clear that the process that was followed was wrong. After long engagement, Madam Chair, it was agreed that they will not pursue that portion of the lease, which was part of the forensic finding. So as a result of that, that 6 million rand finding has been sorted, at least in as far as that part is concerned. So that issue has been finalized. In terms of the disciplinary hearings, I can provide exact details. There's been resignations, there's been terminations, and there's last two cases left, and warnings as well, and there's two cases left that have just been concluded, awaiting outcomes out of the Devon lease. And we will give just a detailed report on number of terminations, resignations, warnings, and also the two outcomes that are coming. then the other issue was, I think it was about the reporting, which we will deal with. On the detail, it is always difficult to know how far you go with the detail that we must provide for the presentation, because you're given a template that you must use. All the information that is asked for, and it's there, it's available even now for us to provide. But I will seek guidance maybe moving forward from the DG on how far we can go with the detail to help members so that you'll be able to do your overseeing function properly. That we will fix, because the information is there, including the financial one. We will also provide that per, because there is a document that shows that per strategic objective, how much was budgeted, how much what the cost was. Probably it will also help maybe to do a year-on-year comparison, which will then give you a perfect picture whether we're making progress or not making progress. So we undertake that, we will provide the detail. On the outsourcing of cleaning, there are two competitions there. Yes, it is correct. We are most of our cleaners, especially starting even from our head office, they're no longer part of the outsourced service. They are now full employees of the CCMA. And in fact, also in terms of our increases that we give to staff, they've benefited from that, and there's been a positive feedback. The only competition that we had was when we do a cost comparison, that if are we able to afford now, like if we go to Northern Cape, can we afford to take all the cleaners here, or must we keep with the outsourced service? So the decision to create employees instead of just outsourced service, there's no question about it. But the issue is that at all times we must act within our budget so that we don't overspend, especially on personal costs, given the directive coming from Treasury. So we've been very careful in dealing with that. It was not just limited to cleaners. It also included our interpreters, because I think I reported last time that all our interpreters that were part-timers and not employees, all of them are now employees of the CCMA. And I think it's more than 300 of them in the whole country. And we've asked for assistance so that we keep them there, and we've received assistance. So it's a whole pot, not just the cleaners, also the interpreters, which I think is a very good thing. The only side effect of taking interpreters full-time that happened, which we didn't expect, I only realized afterwards, is that as we made them full-time employees, the bargaining councils who were using the same interpreters now no longer had interpreters to use, which then affected their own processes, which was a blind spot that we didn't see. We realized when we met the bargaining council and said, wonderful, you've done a good thing, and people are happy, they're employees, they've got stability, they've got assurance that they're employees, which is a good thing in terms of the overall objective of social justice, but we can't do our case because we took all of them. Now we're sitting in a scenario that they are employees of the CCMA, so how do you help the bargaining councils, the same bargaining councils that we are accrediting? But we met with them and we discussed and said, because there are some of our interpreters who do not work full month. So I have given a recommendation to the team, and that those that are not working fully, they must be allowed to have a contract that says that they can have additional work. For example, if they work, say, till 3 days a week, so the rest of the days they can go work in the bargaining council. Instead of saying you're an employee, you can't have private work, it won't make sense financially, and it won't make in terms of job security as well. So I've given an indication to the team that let's allow them to do so, so that the bargaining council can also continue to be viable. In some cases, cleaners don't want to be employees for some strange reason. They want to be part of the, we can't push them to do so. But to the extent that we advertise and employ cleaners, we do so. So that's part of the program. That part we are implementing, as we presented in the previous session. In terms of offices, it remains our wish that we can build offices everywhere, because the need is everywhere. But financial constraints won't allow us to open offices and also to just buy two or three trucks, because they're quite expensive. One of the ways of exploring that is, like the IEC will have trucks that they use for elections, but they use them once in 5 years, or just in that period, and see if we can then approach them to say, can we use these trucks for us to be able to access employees wherever we can. So we are exploring that, and it's part of our program for 2017-18. I've asked the team to do a feasibility study to see how practical is that for us to be able to do so. If I may proceed on the enforcement of awards, yes, it is correct. The enforcement of awards, it's part of the report that I reported. The concern that you have is that some sneak in who shouldn't be assisted, because there's a threshold. We've used the Basic Conditions Employment Act that says those who earn below 204,000 must be assisted, because we assume that they can't afford to do so. And our numbers show that we've got employees who've got very good awards, and they go to the employer and said, can you please reinstate and pay me? The employer says, no, I'm reviewing you. They have a right to execute that. They go to the sheriff, can I have a 10,000 rand deposit? They can't afford it. So that's when we had a partnership with Dole. Can you help? Agreed. So we're doing that. What we need to tighten is that those who are above the threshold who enjoy the same benefit to deprive those that are supposed to be assisted. So there's a bit of weakness there. Because when you ask for a pay slip, you said, no, I don't have a pay slip. My employer never gives me it. So they give me an envelope. So it's difficult to say, we can't help you. Then we proceed. So there's a weakness there in as far as ensuring that part is dealt with. On our university project, I must explain clearly that the university project is not meant to outsource the ordinary capacity building work that we do. It's not. It's purely limited to the commissioners. At the moment, we are running a dual program, because at the time when this program started, it was agreed that we must explore and see if this is viable. Because the training of commissioners is the priceless possession that the CCMA has. And then to come up with an agreement that gives the universities that entire program and charging 40,000 rand per candidate, and those that can't afford can't do that. So the board has agreed that we must review this process so that we see how is it benefiting us as it was intended from the beginning. Are we reaping the benefits or are we not? If we are, how do we fix any short challenges, shortcomings that we have in that university project? So in as far as the NQF level issue, you're absolutely spot on, because that's part of the pack. Because one of the challenges that we faced with our internal program was that commissioners who are trained by us, those who do not wish to be commissioners anymore, they want to go and work elsewhere. And then when they present the training to them and say, I was trained by the CCMA, and here's my results, I've got distinctions. But they say, what level is that in terms of National Qualifications Authority? Where does it lie? So we could not do that. So that we've reopened, but it's also dependent on whether we are completely outsourcing our training as it stands to the universities, or are we doing a dual program, or we're just bringing it back. But the NQF level, whichever way we do it, it must be done. It's not only limited to the university project, actually, or the training that we did internally, all our training programs that we do. And in addition to that, what we're doing is also to register the intellectual property right of the programs that we do. The problems that we face, there are certain companies out there that take our program and remove our names and make it their own, and then present and charge exorbitant fees based on our work. So they put no effort, but they reap benefits out of it. So we then discovered that most of our credit problems are not intellectually protected. So that process has already started in protecting our IP, case management, everything else that comes within all our training program. So we are on our way on that. On the trends in as far as the reinstatement and reemployment, we can provide you statistics, because in terms of our processes, we are recording what we call the return to work index. Because the Constitutional Court, in the matter of the UCT versus Nehau, if there's any other case, it said that the primary function and the cornerstone of the Labor Relations Act is job security. And job security cannot be translated into compensation. So the primary remedy that every employee is dismissed must seek is a reinstatement. If you can't get that, you must get reemployment. And compensation must be the very last resort. The only exception is when an employee chooses not to have compensation. That's okay. But when an employee comes and says, I have been dismissed, I want to go back to work, a commissioner can't come unless the provisions in the Act in terms of, you know, Section 183 says that the circumstances are such that you can't return to work, but it must be reflected in the award that the attempt was made based on the evidence that the employee, he found that the dismissal is unfair, that the person must go back to work. But you can't, because escaping that, and then said an employee says compensation, and you give them compensation. Part of the problems that we've encountered was that some of the employees are not very sophisticated. And then when you come in there, a very good case, and you say, So what remedies do you seek? And said the employer is offering money from a hungry stomach with crying children or about to lose your assets because you are unemployed and there's offer of money of interim relief. The sensation is to respond and take compensation, but it only lasts you 2 months or 3 months, but you're still unemployed. So those principles are understood, but it's a question of ensuring that an effort is put where substantively it's found that the dismissal is unfair, that reinstatement be done. This also applies to large-scale dismiss, all forms of dismissals, because the ideal scenario is that everyone who is found to be have dismissed somebody unfairly, substantively, and they remain unemployed, the reinstatement must be automatic. Remedy that must be done, unless the company has closed down, or the circumstances that says that it can't be done. So that, yes, it is a priority, and we're doing. It's a question of tightening up on that. I think, Honourable, we on the costing of the different programs, I've already made an undertaking there that we will give the full costing, so that you can see in the context of what I've responded to earlier on. Yes, we are making progress on the referral forms in terms of the language. And also the challenge is also not limited to the referral forms. It's also extending to our awards that we issue. Because one of the legacy issues that we must really deal with, which is a bit difficult, is that if the commissioner speaks isiZulu, the employer speaks isiZulu, so is the employee. So why is the process in English? You know? So, and then eventually, you know, when you put a test to it and you say, so this, you don't even need an interpreter in the process because everybody understands everybody. But the challenge that you face is when the same award is being reviewed, because you've got judges that can't speak the language, you must translate the transcript. So then things get lost in translation. So if you change the language requirement, it shouldn't be limited to just our processes. We must educate the higher court as well so that they can accommodate the production line of the language, because if you're to give full recognition to language, it must not be done piecemeal. It must be the full value chain, and so we can balance that. So, but at least as a start, the referral forms must be in all languages so that somebody who initiates the dispute must speak in the language that they best understand so they can best express what their real dispute is. Because some of the problems you find is that somebody who says, I have been dismissed, and then you proceed with the case. At the later stage, you realize that the person has resigned. Then you ask, but you resigned, what happened here? But they're not telling you the full story, which will tell you that actually it is a dismissal because he resigned because of the condition, so it becomes a constructive dismissal. But the language helps when people express it in language that they understand. And those that receive them must be able to explain it in the same context. But it's something that we have to do. But we have started with the referral forms, and we are now starting slowly, but very minimally, asking that if all of us speak the same language, let's try it with the same language. Probably we should do that and then end up in the labor court. If the judges raise an issue and says, but what's wrong with the language? So maybe you should start learning the language so that you can be a good judge, so they can understand everything that we say. Because we can't compromise because others are not compromising in the equation. So all of us must make a movement. So I think to a large degree we can be able to achieve that. On the percentage, I got confirmation that the figures are correct, but I will recheck again on the 39% as it reflected from the different quarters in as far as that issue is concerned. On the complaints against commissioners, we have a full report that we provide to our governance committee called GSEC, Governance, Social and Ethics, where every complaint raised against every commissioner is recorded. And from that recorded, we raise it with the relevant manager of the region, and it's raised with the commissioner involved. And then we monitor that it is run until its completion. And then the entire report is presented to the Governance and Social Committee to check that in terms of ethics and conduct that it is being done and is being followed. So, and also not only that, in my office I've created a complaints unit that deals purely on complaints about commissioners. That comes and we make sure that our responses to that meet the minimum standard we set of 48 hours. So that is working quite effectively, and we are doing well in that. And we can provide the full report of that because it's done every quarter as well. We produce that report for governance committees to know how far we're going. If the committee wishes that we share that, we can actually do so. On the explanation further, on a different question, Honourable Member, on the 39%. If I've tried to explain it earlier on when Honourable Hollis was raising the question. It gives you the date as at, right? So it means as at that point in that financial year, we have 39% of jobs on cases referred to us. It will include other matters outside that. And when we're talking about the percentage, it's not the entire unemployment issue. What we're saying that if you look at the 27% of unemployment rate, so if we don't do the 21,000, so probably it'll be slightly higher than that. So our contribution, a small contribution, is just that 0.1% on the number that we have. That assists to bring it down. But it's not the entire change that we can do. We've done, it's impossible for us to do so. But it's just a contribution into that. So that's the 0.1%. That's what we mean. So what I tried to explain earlier on was that if you take this 39% from us and you go to Productivity SA, they've given their own figure, and you put that together, you'll see a different picture on the overall impact on the 27.9% employment rate then. So as it shifts and changes, for example, I was talking to my team now and I said, in the first quarter, Statistics South Africa said, we've shed 15,000 jobs in South Africa, right? So those are the jobs that could not be saved, even by our program. In the second quarter, it said it was 67,000 rand. Sorry, 67,000 jobs that was the money. So I was asking my team to check what the third quarter says, because we're not reporting for third quarter yet, but I wanted to see the trend. Probably it's above 67,000 rand. But we just play that small portion in that equation of the rate of unemployment. That's just that contribution. When it comes to technical language, this is the problem of the CFO in using that language, so I can't help you with that. She can explain. I heard that you also use that language, so on what it means. I think it can be drafted in simpler language. I would prefer the two. The way we've drafted it, our financial results appears, we were actually trying to do that. But can we keep it simple so that what we explain is easily understood? Because that's what it's about. We're not CFOs, we're not financial managers. If you put the accountants here, they speak a language that clearly would think that it's foreign. So I do accept that. Can I just undertake that in terms of language? It applies in drafting contracts as well. It only says when you draft a contract, use simple language of drafting. If you're saying amongst others, don't or say, with necessary changes, don't say mutatis mutandis. Just say so. It's amongst other changes. Then we understand you. Yeah, I do have problems with finance people also when they use that language. But I do apologize for that. We can improve on it. We won't use such strange languages. And maybe they're trying to impress us. But and then on the calendar day, the day.
I am giving you a minute to wrap up because you are passionate about what you are doing.
My pleasure. It's the final one, Madam Chair. On the day, it's defined in the rules also, our rules. I'm getting them confused because I'm now thinking about administration management, long and lawyer. On what day means, it is defined in the rules. What we mean is also defined in the Act, on what day means there. So it defines, it will tell you that for purposes of it means calendar days. For this, it means, working days. So mainly it's calendar days, that because when you calculate, it includes weekends as well. So it is inclusive, it's not exclusive of that. That's why when you have, like during the period of shutdown, we also make provisions in our rules that if you calculate, if the shutdown ends here, this is how you calculate. So it's clearly defined in the Act. It's clearly defined in the rules. Madam Chair, that's all. I apologize for more information.
Members, I warned you when you exhausted yourselves in Productivity SA that this is going to catch up with all of us. At this stage, I have no option but to thank the department for the presentations. If you had a follow-up, there'll be a next time. This is not the end of the road. Thank you very much. I think, members, it's for us to take the next 5 minutes to wrap up the remaining topics. The department can quietly move if they wish so, because we are just finalizing our agenda. The item is what you raised, Honorable Ollis, so let's quickly deal with that.
Honorable Ollis, you sponsored an agenda item which talks to the invitation of the minister, and nobody was against that proposal. I think now what we need to do is, let us be clear which items would we love to be tackled, because we can't just say to the minister, come, and when she's here, we bombard her with questions, and when she says, I'll check with my officials, we feel offended. And also in terms of time, my proposal is that let us not dictate time that she must come on this date, because we don't know her program. But we would love her to come at the earliest convenience. I think that is the spirit, unless I'm misinterpreting what the view of the committee is. Honorable Ollis, and then Honorable Shaula.
Thanks. Chair, thank you. I mean, the spirit of it is that we want just to be able to ask the minister questions when things arise. And we were elected in 2014. And since 2014, the minister has only attended once. And when I ask the minister why she's not coming to the committee, she says she's not invited. So the fault is then not with the minister, the fault is with us. We don't invite her. And I want that to be corrected. I mean, it is just not normal for a minister not to be invited to a committee for years. We've had 2014, 2015, 2016, now we're in 2017, and we've only invited her, according to her, we've only invited her once. That can't be right. At least a couple of times each year she should be coming, and then we can put questions to her on the relevant matters. So if it is NEDLAC, we can put NEDLAC questions. The trouble now is that it accumulates. We haven't been able to ask her questions for years. So, I mean, I don't want to give a whole long shopping list now to the committee. I can, if you want, submit an email with a lot of things. But you know, when it is legislation, we can talk to legislation with the minister. When it is service delivery, we can raise our concerns about service delivery or whatever the thing is. But it is just abnormal for a minister to only come once in 4 years. It's just abnormal. And it shows that we as a committee don't take the minister seriously. We think the minister is, you know, is not supposed to attend our committee. And the minister says it's not her.
Excuse me, the committee is in progress. So the people that are standing there are not supposed to be there. Just take them to the gallery.
That's correct. So my request is that we schedule a regular request for the minister to attend, maybe once a quarter or something. I'm not saying it must be on this day or it must be on that day. I mean, yes, I understand that there are other things that have to happen. But it's just irregular that we only invite her once in 4 years. Then all these things accumulate. And sometimes the DG, you know, we may want to say to the minister, can you instruct the DG to do this? But we can't tell the DG that. We must tell the minister that, you know, the DG is the official. He's not... he can't instruct himself. You know.
Honorable Saul.
Yeah, Chair. I'm not opposed to... In fact, I agree with the view. But I was just going to point out... I'm not sure now you said that... I was not here when you discussed the matter of the minister. But what I was going to say is I was looking at the agenda, where are we now, when you raised that question. You see, just to point out that it is not in the agenda. But because of it's in the best interest of the committee, I agree that let's agree on the frequency, and I'm supporting the frequency of once at least a quarter. The minister must be here. So I agree with it, I agree with it, Chair. And then on the issues that you want to raise, I was going to suggest that perhaps let's agree that we'll send our questions or our issues that we want to raise, and then we will have them consolidated in the next meeting if they need to be consolidated. But just to reflect the issues that we are raising as a collective to the minister. So what we can do, we can send the email to Zolani, and then they can compile, and then next week we agree, and then they be sent to the minister.
Honorable Mkongi, I saw your hand up.
No, thank you very much, President. Unless we want to start another process, there's a process of parliament for parties to ask questions to the minister. That one must be clear. But there's something that I just did not understand. I thought the regularization of the attendance of the minister is based on the presentation of the strategic plan to the committee. And strategic plans are being tabled yearly. Because it is difficult for members of parliament to ask policy questions from DGs because they are not, people who coordinate policy, is a minister. So those questions could be asked then. But in terms of the invitation of minister into the portfolio committee is to for the minister to answer those policy questions as per the plan in the strategic plan. One of the policy questions is the question that we're talking about of the minimum wage. The second policy question, that is the one that we asked from NEDLAC of the comprehensive social security system. So I'm saying, Chairperson, to regularize that once a year in terms of the strategic plan when they come to present it, because the minister gives an overall political overview of the strategic plan going forward. Two, we invite minister on policy questions, not on administrative questions that could be answered by the DG. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I summarize by saying, one, let us not confine on terms of saying how many times are we to invite the minister, because there may be a necessity of instances that are more than what we have straitjacketed ourselves in. Currently, we are agreeing in principle we need to invite the minister. So we are going to invite the minister, but emphasize that over and above what we would like to check from the minister is this burning issue of the minimum wage, because progress at NEDLAC is a bit ahead of us. Then if there are other matters, as a committee, we'll talk about that and then we proceed. It does not mean when she's here we'll say, talk about minimum wage and then go, because this invitation also has an impact on our agenda for the particular day when she's going to be available. So can we close it at that, honorable members?
So can I just confirm, you're saying that you agree as a committee that we are going to invite the minister more frequently than once every 4 years, which has been just not enough, and that we will discuss as time goes on what agenda items are relevant to the minister and so on.
That is what I'm saying, but I'm saying for starters, let's now, because there's an urgent matter, not that I'm saying others are not urgent, this issue of minimum wage, let's start there, then we'll see what happens thereafter. Okay, Honorable Nkong.
Honorable, all this is amusing me. Is it true that the minister is being invited every time after 4 years? Because that is sarcasm. Or it was a matter of oversight from the committee that it didn't, invite. Because if we are going to say that, say, you are going to make it as if it's a tradition of this committee to call its own ministers after a 4 years period cycle, it's wrong. I don't think it's fine to put it that way. It might be the oversight of the committee in this term of parliament.
No, what we are agreeing on is the summary I have given, Honorable Mkongi. So let us not fight over trivial issues. It's fine. The minutes, let's quickly look at the minutes where they push. Have you given another one? Okay. Those that were present can they assist us with the minutes? Anyone who proposed the confirmation of these minutes as a true reflection is minutes of the meeting held on the 7th December. Honorable Mkongi?
Yes, this is a true reflection, and I wanted to move for the adoption of the minutes, but I think the question of the register that we sign, I think it's very important to be accompanied by this thing. Because sometimes you find that a person was present and then here is being put absent, for example, and then there was a mismatch in the signature or when you were typing. So I just wanted to propose, this is very important because it talks to us when we account at the end of the year. Thank you.
Proposal for adoption with that amendment made. Honorable Khawula.
Chair, I was present at this meeting. I am marked absent. You see.
You are marked somebody with an apology.
But I was present at this meeting.
On the 7th?
On the 7th of December.
In the last meeting of the year?
Yes.
Can those who were present try and press record? We'll go to the registers, but if your signature is not there in the register, we'll sit with an understanding that you were not in the meeting. And Zolani is also going to check his emails.
Yeah,
because when you have an apology, it means you indicated that you are not going to be in. For instance, with myself, I understand I was in the ad hoc committee. So I'm not disputing that. So are you still disputing?
Chair, I think they are giving you a companion on apologies. I'm not your companion. I was not absent with you.
I can't.
Zolani will come back. It's fine. Zolani will come back.
In the next 100 years, you'll never be my companion. With that, honorable members, thank you for speeding up the agenda. I assumed that Honorable America was seconding Honorable Mkongi in the minutes. Yes. So with the minutes being adopted, that brings us to the end of our meeting for today and also the end of my tenure as a chair. Thank you, Honorable Members.